Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Many Americans say they focus on saving for retirement when they reach their 50s. But what happens if you lose your job at that age? Our economics correspondent Paul Solman and his producer Diane Lincoln Estes look at that challenge as part of our Making Sense series, Unfinished Business.
Every morning, 59-year-old Jade Crist leaves his home in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and drives to work at a local print shop.
I'm a fulfillment associate, fulfilling individual orders and then, you know, making sure that all the product that's printed and needs to be distributed locally is delivered, so like a delivery driver.
Crist spent his career in a higher echelon of the printing industry than this. For almost 30 years, Crist was a manager at printing giant R.R. Donnelly.
I've always supervised, always managed, and there was part of me like, this, I'll be one of those guys that retires here.
No such luck. He was laid off in 2016. His plans derailed when the firm reorganized. Economist Richard Johnson's work has shown that Crist is far from alone.
We found that more than half, 56%, of workers experienced an involuntary employer-related job separation after age 50.
Crist, who'd made $100,000 a year, began looking for a comparable job. But he soon realized...
Where I had been after all those years with salary and benefits and things was... not what I was going to get if I stayed here. But also at the same time, I'm looking at this, I still had kids in school. I had, you know, had bought a house. All the things that kind of hold you to a place.
Crist is a case in point of what, in our ostensibly booming economy, so many workers in their 50s and older face these days, says Professor Teresa Ghilarducci.
They're less mobile. Older workers are sticky to their geographical place. They have relationships with people in the community. They have a house for all the reasons that we all know. And so they can't move to get a better job.
Crist also faced another hurdle shared with Americans turning his age, 59. 400 of us every single minute.
A lot of companies don't want to hire somebody who's 50 plus and needs a, you know, has a salary expectation that's above what they're willing to pay, so they can easily say it's because of salary or wage.
Crist only found the job at local H&H Printing after about a year of looking.
Had to take a heck of a cut to pay, but I was happy about it. It's hourly. It's about $40,000 a year.
That's not unusual, says Richard Johnson.
Almost all workers who lose a job at older ages end up making much less on the new job than they did on the old job. We found that only 10% of people earned as much on the new job as on the old job. And on average, they tended to earn only about half as much.
Crist's printing job doesn't pay enough, so he also works nights from 7:30 to 2 a.m. at Planet Fitness for $12 an hour.
It's at your front counter service, and you're checking people in, and you're helping them, you know, helping with their memberships. So it's about 4.5 hours of sleep during the week that I'm getting.
Half a night's sleep, and then back to H&H Printing.
If I wanted to lay down right now and fall asleep, it would be easy.
But he can't, not even on Sundays, when Crist heads to a third job at a local brewery.
It's nice to get, you know, a little bit of cash for tips, because it's just a minimum wage job otherwise. Because then you have, you know, a little extra money, and you're not waiting you know, between paychecks and having to manage all of that.
With three jobs plus $14,000 a year pension from R.R. Donnelly, Chris still brings in barely 70% of his previous income.
You know, can I manage to continue to work this many hours, this many jobs? My mind says I will, I have to. I mean, if I start thinking I can't or it's too hard, then mentally, you wouldn't be able to manage it. So long as I'm, you know, stay healthy and can manage it, and I'll have to.
Chris's younger daughter is in college. His wife's depression and anxiety have worsened since his layoff, preventing her from working.
You know, I see my wife and her, you know, the depression and the physical things that she's gone through. And so there's that part of it, too. I mean, just the economics of, you know, care, medicine these days is just, it's outrageous. It's like so I try not to think about that, because that almost would, you know, put you over the edge. Just do whatever you got to do to keep everything else afloat. But
so many older workers are struggling to do just that, says Ghilarducci.
When you look at real lives and you see the turmoil in their work life between, let's say, 59 to 63, and their health, there's a lot of shocks that are going on with their spouse and with themselves because they're interdependent.
Which raises the stakes for workers like Jay Crist to stay healthy.
I was unloading off of one of the trucks and fell onto my shoulder and back. Thank God I didn't break anything. I didn't, you know, tear anything. I didn't cut anything. I didn't lose any days of work. And it wasn't, you know, I was just lucky as hell that I thought, man, it's all it would have taken.
Traditional retirement, as for so many once secure older Americans, is out of the question.
I pretty much blew through all of the 401k stuff I had. So at this point, there's like really no savings. I mean, the house and still paying a mortgage on it is, that's what I have. It's frustrating that, you know, in my mind, somebody who's done the things you kind of were told as a kid and as you were growing up you needed to do, you know, stay at a job, work, learn, you know, be helpful, get promotions, do right by people. And then you find yourself at this point in your career like going, that doesn't mean shit.
Chris now understands what he didn't when he was in the manager's seat.
I had to lay off an entire family, husband, wife, and daughter. And prior to that, I kept telling them, you guys need to try to do something. You need to try to find something. Now I find myself in that situation like going, that wasn't really helpful to be able to say those things, because you can't just go out and find another job. And I was the guy who laid them off. And at least I'm not that asshole anymore.
No, he's not. Jay Crist works more, is paid less, and now that a third of the workforce is 50-plus, they're figured to be many more like him. For the PBS NewsHour, this is Paul Solman.
Black brother to hell.
If you think it's rare for American children and teens to have a black male teacher, then you are right. And because of this, African American men in classrooms often have more challenges succeeding and staying in the education field. St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson spoke with the founders of Black Males in Education in St. Louis about those specific struggles.
With the shift in demographics, minorities make up the majority of the public school population in the U.S. But minorities make up just 20% of teachers. And of that, only 2% are African American men. That's according to the U.S. Department of Education. So when you think about it, that means that some children will reach college without ever being exposed to a black male teacher.
I'm gonna hold this up, not to embarrass you, but to make sure.
Okay. That's Tracy Mack. He is a sixth grade social studies teacher at Steger Sixth Grade Center in the Webster Grove School District. He's been teaching for 18 years. He says he has seen the long-term effects on students that have not had an encounter with an African-American teacher, let alone a black male educator.
There are lots of kids who want to be teachers, but not many of them have a black male teacher to refer back to because they don't see us that much in the classroom.
Although Max says the challenges are great when it comes to being a black male teacher, but he believes that the times are changing when it comes to equity in the education system. The movement Black Males in Education St. Louis is a part of that change. It's a group that supports African-American male teachers, administrators, and aspiring educators.
Education is a rewarding field, I would say, but it's also one where it can be pretty lonely depending upon your position.
That's Howard Fields III. He is the co-founder of the organization and a principal in the Webster Grove School District.
We knew we wanted to support one another because we don't want folks to leave the field.
Parkway South High School's assistant principal, Darryl Diggs Jr., knows exactly what it feels like to want to do just that.
There was a student that came up to me, and my student said, "Diggs, do you see this?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And so my student showed me their phone, and it was an Instagram post which had my face on it and the N-word across the top of it.
Diggs says the post was humiliating, and he grappled with the idea of work being a safe environment for him. But instead of leaving, Diggs helped found Black Males in Education St. Louis.
Because it's about action, that we need to do better, be better, and also connect and let folks know that you're not alone.
Both Diggs and Fields understand what it's like to feel isolated in the education space. Diggs is the only Black male administrator in his district. As for their group, Phil says the number one topic that most male educators discuss during their meetups is how to deal with loneliness within their particular school or district. Mac, the sixth grade social studies teacher, says being the lone Black teacher can be exasperating.
People were looking to me for the Black perspective. And it's like, you know, I don't speak for all Black people. There are other situations where why am I the only one that's got to speak up when it's obvious injustice?
Phil says two challenges they have noticed are recruitment and retention. Earlier this month, the group hosted a symposium that featured discussions with several regional administrators about recruiting, career advancement, and diversity and inclusivity. There were also districts recruiting educators at the seminar.
From our Black male educators, that there is some feeling that there needs to be a special formula that they need to achieve and accomplish to be able to get to the table to be interviewed. And then after they're interviewed, are they able to advance through the layers of steps in order to obtain a position?
Nevertheless, both principals say they are seeing some movement when it comes to hiring more teachers of color. But when the educators get into the school system, they often feel voiceless. Here's Fields again.
Diversity doesn't necessarily come by way of inclusion. But if you're not treating your folks of color in a magnitude where they feel welcome, you're going to create a dynamic where you may be able to have people of color in your organization, but they will leave your organization.
Until more African-American men are equally represented in education, Diggs and Fields will continue to do their work. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
To hear from other African-American male teachers and to learn more about Black males in education St. Louis, visit stlpublicradio.org.
I can feel it deep inside, this Black nigger's pride. I have no fear when I say, and I say it every day, every nigger is a star. Every nigger is a star. Who will deny that you and I and every nigger is a star?
I'm here. I'm sitting here in the back seat.
Please leave my vehicle.
Is that because I'm white?
No, sir.
My life has been ruined.
A racist outburst now has a Valley CEO out of a job. And tonight, in an ABC 15 exclusive, we're hearing from Hans Berglund for the first time.
ABC 15, Zach Crenshaw, the only reporter speaking with all the parties involved. And Zach, both sides told you they want the same thing here.
They want a meeting, Katie and Steve. Neither side knows what that looks like just yet. But pretty soon, the men could be face-to-face yet again after an interaction that lasted roughly a minute but changed both their lives.
Hans Berglund was the founder of a successful company last week. Now,
I don't have anything to do with the company anymore. I'm fired.
All because of an Uber trip, where the driver asked Hans to sit in the back.
Are you serious with me?
No, I don't like when people sit in the front, period. I'll cancel and refund you.
The ASU senior, Randy Clark, canceled the trip, but Hans still hopped in.
I'm here. I'm sitting here in the back
please
seat.
Please leave my vehicle.
Is that because I'm white?
No, sir.
You're a
oh, man.
So blown out of proportion, and it's ruined my life. It's ruined my company.
I think Agroplasma took one step in the right direction. I think there's much more to be done.
Hans tells me the racial slur is not who he is. Randy, though, isn't so sure.
I think he's been getting away with such or similar language for a long time.
Using that word came very naturally to him.
Randy, now asking the Attorney General's office and City of Tempe to investigate a possible civil rights violation.
I think a lot of Uber drivers who look like me have experienced this.
For Randy, it was a racial slur he thought was a thing of the past. For Hans, it made his life last week a thing of the past.
Such a sad story. You have no idea what has happened here.
I don't want his life to be ruined, but this man should not be in a position of power.
Now, talking with Hans tonight, it was clear he was hurting and extremely upset. But, Katie, it was also clear in a way that Hans viewed himself as a victim of all of the online backlash.
Yeah, or he could take this time to explore why something like that would come out of his mouth at this time. Zach, thank you.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious. Meanwhile, white people are very serious about playing hardball against us. And this hardball is called genocide.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, February 21st, 2020, so I have been told. I totally forgot. I do not celebrate anything. I've said that for a long time. I do not celebrate Watermelon Day on the plantation. I do not celebrate Christmas. I do not celebrate Valentine's Day, Black History Month, St. Patrick's Day, birthdays, Guy Fawkes Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day, nothing. Anniversaries, nothing. I did remember, but I did not think at any point on this date until about 5 minutes before we went on air, like, oh, wow, today is the 11-year anniversary of our return to the air. 11 years. Counter-racist material. Well, what that's worth. One perspective, you can look at that and say we have not succeeded in our mission. 11 years, we have not figured out what to do to solve this problem. And have not made a whole lot of progress either. Favorite word in talking about racism. Have not made very much progress at all. But, hey, I do not think if you asked myself or anyone else 11 years ago on this date, do you think 11 years from now you will be able to maintain consistently and be able to broadcast for the next 11 years? That would have been a good laugh. Either way, the problem, that is the reason we have been here for 11 years, still trying to solve the problem, the system of white supremacy racism. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Let us know if you got through Black History Month, so they call it, unscathed, meaning they didn't have Fried Chicken Day in your workplace. They didn't have Watermelon Day in the workplace. They didn't have Collard Green Day or Aunt Jemima Day in the cafeteria. They didn't have any of that. They didn't have a twerking celebration to celebrate black females. If any of that did happen, you can certainly share. But if you got through unscathed, spectacular. We'll move forward and be on alert. I do think St. Patrick's Day is coming up next month, and that does tend to be one that's associated with a lot of alcohol. I've been around white people where alcohol and violence, because they do some of that pinching if you don't, you know, have on green. So be on alert. Next holiday, just be prepared. Anywho, before we get to the callers, the audio segments that we started with. Wow, I took quite a few notes. I'll go reverse order. The last segment that we heard, the Uber driver, victim of racism, who was assaulted. We have Cal's listeners who have, you know, called in, written in, talking about their experience doing rideshare and some of the perils from, you know, people touching your vehicle, your property, and digging all into compartments and things in your property to, you know, what they call you, being attacked, feeling unsafe, that sort of thing. And some people even saying, hey, I don't think it's, this is not worth the risk. I am not going to do this. I do not want to subject myself to just any old random person hopping in the vehicle just to, you know, earn a few dollars. No, thank you. I thought it was so important, the segment that we heard. That young male had a code. You are not supposed to sit in the front, and letting the person know that. I think a lot of times, system of racism, we can be intimidated about speaking up to white people, about telling them no. To just say that immediately, like, hey, no, you cannot, I do not do hugs or touching. You cannot sit here. Just say that, be direct about that. We talked about that. Sometimes that is the best approach. You have to consider each situation, but that is definitely one. If you're doing ride share and close proximity and that sort of thing, it is your vehicle, your property. Absolutely. Have a code and a code for your safety if you're going to do that sort of work, because it's dangerous. Then the race soldier, he gets out, Hans, he goes to the rear of the vehicle, like, all right, fine, I've obeying your rule, Negro, now drive. And he's like, nope, you know, tried to tell you, you didn't want to obey, I'm going to go ahead and cancel the ride. And just be firm, decisive about that. Like, no, I'm not going to hem and haw and give this race soldier an opportunity to sweet talk me, as they say, and get me to change my mind. Nope. Cancel the ride. Please exit my vehicle. It's like, what? What are you, now, I'm a novice. I've had a cell phone for, what is it, like 5 minutes? So, you know, hey, I'm not someone who's going to sit here and talk to you like I'm an expert about mobiles. However, or using rideshare services. However, it's been my experience that if you have an issue or an incident, something happens with your ride, you can just call another. It's not a big deal. I'm sure he could have got out, waited 2 seconds, and whammo, put in the information, got a new ride. No big deal. They got multiple ride share services. No big deal. No, he launches into his terrorist attack. You know, dirty nigger and coon drive call. What are you talking about? Tip white man knowing all that. Stayed calm. And he had recording. It looked like the victim in this incident looked like he had some sort of recording device in the front of his vehicle. That should be mandatory if you are going to do that sort of work, just so that you have protection. You have evidence of, you know, what transpired. And he was so, the victim I'm talking about, he was so codified. Sir, please exit my vehicle, sir. Same way, you know, I recommend talking on this program. He's not, cracker, get out of my car and all that. No. Still going by my professional code. Sir, please exit the vehicle. I've canceled the transaction. Please exit the car. Thank you. Just be codified. I would have got to, and that, I guess, might be one thing. I might call the enforcement officers if it gets to that point where I've canceled the transaction. I've asked him to exit the vehicle, and he's launched into this violent tirade, nigga this and blah, 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 blah. Might be time to call enforcement officials because, yeah, I mean, you just don't know if this person is armed. He could have a machete, be trained in, you know, Mortal Kombat. You don't know. Not, I mean, he's trespassing at minimum. At that point, might be a time to decide about whether or not you want to call enforcement officials. And then you see the tackiness after all that. Hans, suspected race soldier. I'm a victim. I've been terror. You see how they're talking to me? I've been fired. Lost. White people don't get fired. They get transferred. I'm sure he'll be, you know, he'll go through sensitivity training and all that. He'll donate, you know, some money to the NAACP and volunteer for local charity at the food bank. And I'm sure things will be all right. Hans will update his resume, and it will include successful completion of sensitivity training. Anyway, have a code. Keep yourself safe, because there's tons of those. We have, you know, one of those type of incidents could be played weekly on this broadcast. And as I said, we've had listeners who've called in, written in about this same type of thing. So you got to have a code if you're going to do anything, any sort of job like this, for your safety, and expecting that this sort of thing is likely to happen. How are you going to respond? You can role play that as well. Let's see. Next, before we get to the trips, incidents like that and those acute episodes of white terrorism, that's why we are having the COWS Counter-Racist Yoga Retreat. May 21 through May 24. Yoga every day. Plant-based meals. We'll have counter-racist workshops, food workshops, where we will go over how to prepare some of the amazing food that we are going to chomp on. We should have recipes that you can take home, try out for yourself. We'll have counter-racist workshops as well, a constructive exchange of views, and just some relaxation time. That's something that I really appreciated about Florida, to just have time to just unwind and relax comfortably with other victims of racism. I think that's super important, so we'll do some of that as well. But May 21 through May 24th, looking forward to hanging out. We have space left if you would like to join us. The price, $660 total. The deadline to register is February 29th, which is next weekend. Not this coming weekend, next weekend. Deposit of $400 signs you up. You can pay the remaining $260 by May 1st. Super excited. Looking forward to tasty vittles, excellent yoga, and hopefully cooperative weather so that we can have a blast visiting Toronto in the spring. But email if you need more information. May 21 through May 24, coming to Toronto. Get your passport. Next, back to the reports. Now, the second report that was played, that was about black male teachers, the dearth, lack of black male teachers. I thought of a young academic who was with us for the Virginia and Florida retreats, respectively, and he's participated before and talked about difficulties in passing. I think it's some sort of exam that they have for teachers that you can teach, but right now he's at a capacity where they don't have to compensate him the way that they do teachers who've passed this, and you can be on much better standing and have all the benefits and perks of the job and be more stable in your career. And they said that, you know, there seems to be some sort of racial disparity where black teachers have a tough time passing this test. They have all of these strange obstacles to explain why you have a lack of black male teachers, not just in St. Louis, but, you know, across the so-called country, and all of these different methods that they try to come up with to see if we can get more black male teachers. Another illustration of black male privilege. Yes. I also thought it was important because we had it back to back in a workplace. 2020, right? That's, I can't believe this is happening in 2020. In a workplace setting, a black person being called a nigger, because we heard one of the black male educators say that he saw it, one of the students had written it, nigger, across where his picture was, nigger. Racist man, racist woman, racist child, and again, white people, even racist child, they cannot be ignorant about racism. But you got to have that in your code, even if you are a teacher. Now, if I go in and I teach kindergarten, because we had, remember, we just had a caller who dialed in. He said he went to drop off his offspring and a little white, this kindergartner. So kindergarten is five, right? I don't have children, but I think that's five, right? You can get me if I'm in error. 5-year-old white girl walked by him, looked him up and down. Hey, boy. And walked into school. Teacher looked at that. Oh, boy, aren't they a hoot? Not ignorant about racism. So you got to have that in your code on the job. What to do if I'm called a nigger by a 55-year-old, by a 5-year-old, 12-year-old, 25-year-old? What to do if I'm called a nigger? Already have that in your code and not be stunned. Also, from that same report about lack of black male teachers, they said they had a hard time retaining them, hard time hiring them. What can you do? They said that one problem, I guess this would go with retention maybe, they said loneliness. Now that has come up before, not a whole lot in a workplace setting, but I think that is important because I think for a lot of people, black people, victims of racism, you go into work settings And there is supposed to be some camaraderie. I mean, you spend all this time, 40 hours, could be more than that, 45 hours. And you're the, well, I guess for educators, you're there 9 months out of the year. But I mean, regardless, you're there for a lot of time. And you're seeing these same people. You see them about as much as you see your family, sometimes more often than you get to see your actual relatives, so-called. So it would be nice if there was some camaraderie. That might make it a little more enjoyable to do the job, to be with people that you actually enjoy being around, and you all share information to make it easier to do the job, more productive, more efficient. You can get more things done on the job, and just constructive information in general. Maybe they know some great vegan recipes, or, you know, a place where you can get, you know, cheap tickets to fly to Toronto, you know, all kinds of great resources. That would be awesome. Often that is not the case for black people. And I appreciated that being pointed out, where they just said loneliness, where we just feel isolated, where they just got us. Matter of fact, almost British. Where we had a black female. She was on the program joining us from the UK. This is years back where she was with us. And she talked about the same thing, where they physically moved her office like down to level one. Everybody else's office was like on level three. So, I mean, literally, she is beneath them by like a floor or two. So she's not able to kick it and have coffee and, oh, did you see, you know, the program on, you know, what you call it, ITV last night, and blah, blah, blah. And did you hear what they said about Boris? You don't get to do all that. What's up with Boris Johnson and all the goth? You don't get to be a part of all that. Being isolated, feeling lonely, I think a lot of folks can relate to that. And then they'll turn around and blame that on you and say, well, you don't make an effort to hang out, you know, you aloof, you know, you hang out in the basement all the time. You don't join us for happy hour. And that's the only way you can be in the crowd. You got to go join them for drinks. Let's see. The piece, I thought it was important as well, about workers not being nice. Oh, wait a minute. That's a question. I can get that later. Sorry. Get that later. The first segment that we heard about the struggle for folks who are trying to retire, and they put the specific age bracket of people that are over 50. And I think we had a listener call in before who said he was getting ready to retire, and he was reflecting on some of his experiences. And I talked about, hey, you should write a book or a blog or a vlog or something, because, you know, for a black person to be able to retire, like, wow, that's, you know, rarefied air. Like, the system is not designed for black people to ride off into the sunset. So they say, where I've squirreled, saved away, I've put in my, you know, 35 years, 40 years, whatever it is, and, you know, thank you kindly, gonna go pick out some hobbies, do some yoga, maybe do some gardening, write a book on counter racism, I don't know, do some traveling, get my passport. That is, you know, not supposed to happen for victims of racism, particularly black people. And that report right there, now I think that was a white man who was talking about all his trials and tribulations, and he had to get five jobs and make, you know, pennies on what he used to make and all that sort of thing. Certainly, I would think it would be substantially worse for individuals classified as black. If we have any folks who have any thoughts on that, difficulties, where you feel like, you know, being mistreated, isolated, perhaps made to feel lonely, unwanted. If you are, I guess what they would say, an older worker in that age bracket that they talked about, feel free. But like I said, folks that, you know, have participated who say, hey, they're about to retire. Wow, what an accomplishment. You should maybe reflect on writing a counter-racist book on how you were able to do that. I even remembered we had a caller. She dialed in maybe 2 years or so, 3 years ago, on workplace racism. And she talked about how it was a black male on her job in that age bracket, over 50. And he had worked at the company for like, I don't know, 25 years, for a substantial amount of time. Like, he didn't just join a year or, you know, 5 years ago. He had been there for a while and had got promotions and was kind of a high ranking fella. And he's getting ready to ride off into the sunset. Not so fast, Negra. They demoted him to something like, I want to say it was almost like custodial staff. Like, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but this is in the archives. Like, it was like custodial staff. Like, you know, you go from having a nice desk and you so-called executive making decisions, you might even get to manage, to exactly what Mr. Fuller said. Now you got a buffer or a mop you're going around replacing the paper towel dispenser, something of that nature. I mean, literally, that's what it was. And like I said, this is like for somebody's 55, 56. I think she said he stayed in that capacity for like a month or so and then left the company. But I mean, I've heard that regularly. I think Pam and others have talked about that, where black people, thinking you're almost at the finish line and you've endured all this. Now you can retire and get your, no, thanks. We found an excuse to fire you. We've stolen your pension and we've thrown your belongings out, and that'll be your final indignity. You can go see if maybe you can get a job as a greeter at Walmart to make enough money to pay your electric bill before you die. Good riddance. And thank you for your 25 years of service. Security, watch him. Make sure he doesn't steal anything on the way out. That is the system of white supremacy, labor. Look forward to that. And again, great reason to save if you're that older black person. We say that all the time. If you are fortunate enough, that's why you are not successful. You get that job, you get that title that you're a black manager, you're a supervisor, and you get a lot of zeros on your check, or you get a few commas. How about that on your deposit slip or what have you? Save, be super miserly. So when they come with that excuse why you're being demoted and transferred and all the rest, I am miserly. I did not become reckless with my spending and just going out to splurge every payday. That was not me. I was thinking, I'm going to save every nickel that I have, thinking I do not know when I will go in the next time, and instead of a big paycheck, it'll be a pink slip. That is unfortunately the way that we should be thinking. You do your work hard, but never be surprised about that. This is a system of white supremacy. Now, the question that I was going to ask, we had someone who dialed in. It was not workplace racism. It was during the compensatory call-in, and they were talking about being on a job. It was a new hire, a black person. I think it was a black female, and this black female was kind of aloof, not mean, not nasty, but just not, you know, overjoyed with meeting another black person, and, you know, just professional. How you doing? Kept it moving. And they kind of wanted to know how to deal with this person, and just asking to see if folks had any thoughts, recommendations. I kind of repeated what I've said often. Just seeing another black person in a workplace setting does not mean that this person is a teammate, an ally, a friend, a homie, black brother, black sister. None of that. That system of racism, racists often use other victims to mistreat and harm us, certainly sometimes just to get information about what we are or are not doing in a workplace setting. So we're not going in thinking that this person is a friend just because they have a substantial amount of melanin. If we're able, number one, cordial, being professional, courteous, cordial, and that's really it. And that doesn't mean I'm having a 5-minute conversation and all of this. I don't have any expectation of, you know, a warm, bubbly reception. This is a system of racism. I'm gonna be nice, I'm gonna be cordial. If they ask for help, I'll be cordial and help out in any way that I can, and let them know, you know, come if you need assistance, come let me know, and I'll do my best to assist you. I'll do all I can to help. Let them know that. But I mean, yeah, I'm not thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to go, you know, share Mr. Fuller's information, get them a signed copy of his book, and slow down. But if folks have suggestions on that, feel free. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. This broadcast is not for spectators. If you are one of those black people, got a few commas on your check, hey, spectacular. Be miserly and let us know how you accomplish that. You don't have any difficulty getting time off. You're a black male educator and everything is great. Get all your promotions. You're full time, got all your perks. benefits. You're totally certified, unmolested. Let us know. Your white students don't call you a nigger or a coon, spear chucker, any of that. Let us know how you accomplish that. You get all of your promotions. They are sparkling every time. Your coworkers don't terrorize you. You are well thought of at work, and they always share pertinent information in a timely manner with you. Let us know how you did that, please, so we can copy what you have accomplished. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you are not able to participate via phone, concerned about being identified via your voice, you can always submit via email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can read your commentary anonymously on the air if you have a situation you'd like to present, and or if you have suggestions on what has been shared thus far. I will make sure to get in an email, at least one of them, and then I'll get to the phone lines. Alrighty. First email. I've been remiss. Last week was Valentine's, so they say. I don't know how, but I forgot to report an inappropriate act that I witnessed from a non-white black male towards a suspected racist female at work. Unfortunately, this, I believe, would be... Unfortunately, this, I believe, would be deemed an act of feverishness and, frankly, insanity, in my opinion. We always got the feverish black male, you know. What can be done? He is in part of the catering team. I was buying something to eat, as was the suspected racist female. I was thinking about what I would eat when I overheard the non-white male say to the suspected racist, "You can't have what you want to eat if... You can have what you want to eat if you give me that dress." I looked up to see who he was speaking to and the person's reaction. She appeared to be smiling, but that doesn't mean anything. Amen. Say it twice. That doesn't mean anything. I quickly looked away, but it was obvious. I heard what he said. I've not seen her before. There's more than one company based in the building where I work. But she might be employed by the same organization as me. I think he's playing with fire. I hope I am not in a position where I am asked as a witness. Oh, that would be awful. Woo. I've also been under surveillance this week. We always are. I went to a training session, which was open to all staff at the company where I work. These sessions happen regularly, so not out of the ordinary. A race soldier male in the same team was also there. Again, nothing out of the ordinary. I asked a few questions. As I was interested in the topic. We got question. Niggers that are inquisitive. Let's see where it goes. Later in the week, I had a meeting with my manager, a regular catch-up. To my surprise, she mentioned to me that I was at the training session. She didn't ask a question about the topic, so I'm not sure if she was probing for my opinion on the matter. I did ask the session how staff could get involved in the project, so I suspect that was what was reported back, and she was testing me. She did not ask me a direct question about this. I did not volunteer the information. Niggers are not allowed to progress or learn new skills. Exactly. To be at the training and asking questions. My goodness. Particularly if you ask about how to get involved with the project. Like, we got an inquisitive, ambitious Nigra here? What is going... Yeah, let's definitely... We will keep... Open a file on her right now. We'll get a little... Probably had some unjust networking. Got an ambitious question-asking Nigra in your department. Keep tabs on her immediately. Send all information. That's the environment that we are in. I could be in error. The first portion... Wow. we are under surveillance. One thing I will say, it doesn't matter. Let's take the white woman out of it completely for a few seconds. Let's say she, you know, thinks that this is just the greatest thing in the world. Oh, you're just the funniest colored boy ever. I'll give you that dress and then some. Ha ha ha. She just thinks it's the greatest thing ever. And, you know, you all joke about that. And she thinks it's the funniest thing ever until the day that she dies. She thinks this is the funniest thing ever. And you're the funniest colored boy ever. Jim, who sits two seats down, does not think you are the funniest colored boy ever. And that's all it takes. That's something else to keep in mind when, you know, we're in these workplace settings. It's public. It's not just when you are saying these things, the person that you are talking to. I say consistently when you speak or when you send that email, or some people you might have to text for your job. If you send that text out, this is public. I say, think every single person who works for the company, every shareholder in the company, might be even every client of the company, is going to get a transcript of this. It'll be posted online. It'll be in 10 different languages, maybe 100, and it'll be available for the next 100 years. That's the way that you know, want to think before you speak in the workplace setting. Not just how is the person that I'm talking to going to respond, or how do they think or feel about this, which is important, but everybody else in the work environment as well. It is also super important what was said. Just because someone classified as white, or even someone classified as not white, just because they are smiling about something that you said in a work environment at the time, that does not mean anything. I have seen where people have snickered, laughed about something inappropriate in the workplace, and then a week later they came back. Whammo! It was no more laughing, smiling at all. It was super serious, and it was about terminations and punitive act. And let me pull out this policy and proceed. Like, it was totally different tone. Like, you got to be mindful of that. That's why I said I am not in for a whole lot of joking around in the workplace. Let's be serious. We're not here to clown. We're not here to tell jokes and goof about. I've said that about giving out compliments as well. Going back to what this victim said to this white woman, I've said that consistently. We're not giving out compliments in the workplace. If it's going to be any complimenting at all, it will be about the work. Never about someone's attire, their earrings, they got a new hairdo, they got a new car. I don't care anything about any of that. It's like, I don't see it at all. Paperwork, the report, the presentation you get, woo, outstanding. The photocopying was just amazing. I can't believe you got it done so quick. Matter of fact, you got it on my desk. It was all collated. It was still warm. Amazing job. Like, that's fine. We're not doing it again. I mean, this, you're asking to be terminated. The era of Me Too and Bill Cosby, this is the type of thing. I wouldn't say this to a black person, male or female. Nothing even remotely like that. Let's see. Called in as a witness. Oh, shudder to think. Shudder to think. I would. That's one where I might say something. I guess everybody. That's one we certainly all have VGQ, Victims Guarantee qualified. But if something like that was said in my presence, that might be something where I said something to that person. I think a retired firefighter has mentioned that one time he did say something to another victim. They were going to engage in some maybe inappropriate behavior at a staff meeting, and it was going to happen in his presence. And so he said, oh man, this is going to impact me, so I'll say something in advance and see if I can kind of preemptively shut this down, which he did. That might be one where I might say something. Like, if we have a rapport, now if this is a black person I don't get along with, me and this black guy, just, you know, he hates my guts and, you know, makes an elevator insult every time we come in the building and that type of thing, fine, no problem, minimize contact, just keep it, you know, professional courtesies. But if we have like a modicum of rapport, we speak, we get along, we haven't had, you know, a brouhaha in the past, I might see if I could just talk to him really quick and say, you know, I would just be mindful about those sort of things. You heard about Bill Cosby, right? He's okay. R. Kelly, right? They got another special on him now. it might just be a good idea to be careful about the type of comments that you made. You could put it the same way that I just said it. Like, you know, I don't know how you and her get along. Y'all might be best buddies. I don't know. But I do know that other people can hear what you say in the office. And I don't know if you are best buddies with everybody who's here. And them hearing you make those type of comments about taking a dress off a white woman might raise an eyebrow or two or eight. Again, if I had a rapport with this person, I might say something like that or something similar. And I would add, I'm only mentioning this because it was said in my presence. And I'm partly doing this out of self-interest because I would really hate to be called in as a witness to ask, did I hear such a statement? Did I think it was a joke? What did I think? Like, oh man, that would be a terrible part of my workday because that sort of thing does happen. So just, you know, maybe something to think about, the type of humor and how bawdy we get with our jokes in the workplace. Just something to think about. That would probably be the type of way that I would present it if I had a rapport. Now, if I didn't have a rapport with this victim, because that has been the case for me in workplace settings, me and this non-white person, this black person, we didn't get along. No problem. I wouldn't say a word. Keep it to myself and just hope to God that that day doesn't come where, yes, Gus, we'd like to ask you, there was a comment made about a white woman being raped potentially. And we just, ooh, I don't recall. And I'm having a panic attack. I need 5 minutes to gather my thoughts. Woo. Anyway, if you have thoughts, suggestions on what we heard in the email or any other component of what has been discussed thus far. If we have folks, as I said, over 50 workers and that experience, feel like you're trying to get nudged out of the workplace. If you have thoughts on that experience and or folks with thoughts on dealing with a new non-white person to the workplace who does not seem like they're jumping up and down with a black power fist salute. And a hug for you. They just seem like they're keeping their distance and being professional. If folks have any thoughts on how they would function in that situation, feel free. Or if you have your own situations, recommendations, or problems you'd like to share up, the number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open again, not for spectators.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. Yes, I knew my unpaid comedian coworker enough to approach him, and it's a technique that you use, and I've heard Mr. Fuller stated where you ask the person, can I talk to you? In other words, you just don't barge in, you just don't barge upon the person and say, hey, come here, man, you know, something like that. You ask, can I talk to you for a second? You know, that sort of thing. And to get their approval. And then in a calm voice, you know, I stated what I stated to him regarding the gorilla mask that he was about to wear in the staff meeting. And you can apply that to just about any type of scenario. But as Gus mentioned, it'd be good if you have some sort of relationship with the person. With the coworker, non-white black coworker, that the way I figure it out is that goes to the minimum of greetings and that sort of thing. Heck, that might be me. But anyway, I don't take it personal or anything like that. That was almost from day one on the job that I was on about my expectations. You know, I wasn't looking for a lot of friendliness and compassion and that sort of thing. There was a almost natural connection because it was so few of us at the time when I first got on. And in a lot of cases, the climate of race of white supremacy was obvious. But if there was someone who was like that, I just keep it moving. And in some cases, with that particular type of person, you find out in a lot of cases that person has a reason why they do what they do or say what they say, and it's not all negative. It's not necessarily negative. You know. Also, you mentioned that one of your reports was about teaching. My offspring is near to the point of graduating, going through the part of graduating from college with the training in mind to become a teacher, and I'm going to kind of like move our conversations into the area of strategy. In the strategy and behavior in the workplace, more concentrated on that, as opposed to the process of getting out of college. I've been thinking about it a lot, you know, because he'll be right in the middle of it within a year or a year and a half, something like that. Anyway, that's my thoughts so far. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Great information. I don't. A lot of times for folks that are in the education programs, they have to do a class, what they call a classroom practicum. You go out and do some teaching.
Do the teaching.
And it's not even, man, we did a whole program about that. We had a black female with us in 2014, and she talked about, because it's a lot. I mean, hey, ain't no patriarchy there. That is white women who dominate the field of education, university level and beyond. And she was having a lot of trouble with white women, both her peers in class. She talked about the same thing, isolation. Where it wasn't like they were a nice, big, friendly group, and let's hang out and study together and talk about some of the concepts and, you know, our teaching time and problematic students and how you deal with that. But playing total distance. And the racism from the white woman's class that she was working in, how this white woman treated her, and she ultimately ended up having to switch and get a different teacher to finish out her assignment because the racism was so intense. So yeah, that is right on time. Like, hopefully he'll be able to get a black teacher for his classroom experience, and it'll be spectacular. But yeah, that is, wow, right and needed. Like, wow, we need black male teachers. But oh yeah, like, good luck with that, man. Oh man. Let's see. Other folks, if you have either your own situation or if you have suggestions on what's been discussed thus far, would you say something to the black male who told the white woman, you know, I'll let you eat today or whatever if you give me that dress? Would you say something if this was said in your presence or nah? We have other folks dialed in with a hand up. Line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, Doug. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I, they,
kind of have a question. I was listening to the show, and you made some comments where you were talking about, like, if you were ever called into a situation where, like, you know, human resources or someone were asking you about a particular incident. My question for you is that if that ever were to happen, what would you recommend one doing? My situation, and I've called in before, I have a black male boss, and his subordinates are white males. And with this particular boss, he regularly makes, you know, sexual comments that he shouldn't be making. And he's made those comments, I think, mainly in the sense of trying to have, like, locker room talk and camaraderie with his white male subordinates. However, I've noticed that the dynamic in the office is starting to change. And, you know, you want to have a unity with other non-white people. But, for example, what would you recommend, let's say, if I were ever called, you know, into human resources and, you know, asked about, you know, certain things that have occurred in the office? And I also called, like, a few weeks back. This is the guy who I told you, who, like, on the lunch breaks, him and his white subordinates, you know, they go to basically, you know, to restaurants where the women are, like, serving, you know, food, you know, like, in lingerie and inappropriate clothes. And they do it, like, in the, we work for a municipality, you know, they go in, like, a city, you know, vehicle. And I just wanted to know, if one is ever in that situation where HR, you know, has asked me or anything about it, what should one do? It's kind of like I don't want to be involved in it, but at the same time, I don't want to, you know, for them to, I don't want to lose my job or, you know, be looked down upon either.
Well... What they call it, hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we are in a system of white supremacy. So if you are classified as black, I'm afraid you are being looked down on. Even if you had $1 billion, Oprah Winfrey, they still look down on her. Barack Obama. That's the system that we're in. Sorry on that account. If it's all right with you, I took notes and everything about your report, wanting to have unity with other black people on the job and what happens if you get called into HR and them going to the lingerie joint to hang out. This is a workplace activity in a city vehicle. Yikes, I didn't remember that. But if you will let me detour for like 2 minutes, I promise I will get right back. I just have my own little workplace thing and then I will go right to your question. Do I have 2 minutes to detour?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Whew. Being in a vehicle that has, like, it's a city vehicle or, I mean, retired firefighter. Yes, you're in a fire truck, obviously, but it's like a city vehicle or anything like that. You're in the cable company vehicle. I think we had some people who said that they did, like, Wi-Fi installation or phone service or what have you. You're in a company vehicle. Wow. The racism, white supremacy can be astronomical, and them just one thinking this nigga has stolen a company vehicle and a company uniform and it's going out pretending to be, I mean, whoo, they've been instances of that sort of thing happening. I myself was in a city vehicle. I'm driving to pick up a white client, a white child, no less, driving to pick up this child. Now, I will admit, I was not looking at the speedometer, and I certainly do not remember my exact speed. I do not have what they call a photographic memory. However, I was not what they call a speed demon. I was not flying, driving recklessly in this area. I was not burning rubber, anything like that. It was a calm, sunny day. I'm driving down. I wheel in, not on two wheels, I drive in to pick up this white child. And I'm so, like, oblivious. I'm just driving along, I'm listening to the radio. I pull in, a white man hops out of a vehicle behind me and he says, I'm going to report you flying down the road. What's wrong with you? And I'm like totally confused. Like, what? And he says, I'm going to report you. Who do you think they are? I'm calling in right now and I hope they take that damn thing away from you. Sorry, I should have gave the spoiler, but that's what he said. And I was like, okay. I've got to go get child. Like, what? And so I get the child, drop off, get back, and I think he called like the mayor. Because I worked for the city, or at least he called the mayor's office to be like, you've got some nigger. I think he's stolen a vehicle and he was flying down the road on two wheels. Oh my God. Like, I did not know counter-racism at the time. I had not read Mr. I don't even think I'd heard of Mr. Fuller at the time. I hadn't heard of Mr. Fuller at the time, Dr. Welsing. I didn't know anything about counter-racism. If you had mentioned any of that to me, I was just like, what? What are you talking about? No, this is how I responded then. This is how I would have responded if I had known even like a little bit about counter-racism. Like I said, this race soldier did all this. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? Okay. I go get the child, drop off, get back. And like, oh my gosh. I had a black direct supervisor, but the overall people in charge, of course, are white. And so my direct supervisor, black male, I says, oh my gosh, this white fella, he like called the mayor's office. You know, you were flying. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, and I ended up having to be forced to take a driving safety course as a result of this. If I had known anything about counter-racism, it would have been, number one, I suspect that this fella may have been racist at minimum. I wouldn't think about racist, but at minimum, this fella verbally accosted me. He cursed at me. Did he have a speedometer? Did he know how fast I was going? I would go and check exactly. Now, what's the speed in this area? I think it's 35. Now, how fast was I going? He said, was I going 55, 65, 75? How fast? And how did he know? He followed me. How fast? I mean, come on. Like, none of that. I totally reject all of that. And he followed me. This guy stalked me. That's the exact language I would have used. He stalked me to the facility. I was going to pick up a child and having some white stranger that I don't know out front of a facility cursing at me when a young child is about to come out. I felt totally unsafe. I felt it was unsafe for the child. I tried to run into the facility to get the child. I would have called. That's what I would have done. Called to report him immediately that I have been followed. He's cursed at me and I feel unsafe even bringing out a child. That's how I would have handled that situation, knowing even a little bit about counter-racism. To think of the insanity, like, what? You are following me, George Zimmerman, no less. You are stalking me down to tell me that I'm speeding. You didn't call enforcement if it, like, that's the normal protocol. You just get the license. Boop, make it easy. They have, like, identifying number on city vehicle. Boop, you could just call in. No problem. No. I'm going to speed down the road and check. I would have got out, called, and let them know immediately. I would have got his information, and I would have used the verbiage, stalked. And the exact word I say all the time, I don't feel safe. That is one of the most important words you can use in a workplace setting. You don't even have to bring up racism per se. Just, I don't feel safe. They did X, Y, Z. Threatened me, cursed at me, raising their voice, whatever it was. I don't feel safe. Stalked, always a good one if you can get that verb into. He stalked me to the facility, cursed at me, verbally accosted, totally terrorized. Anywho. Everything is better with workplace racism. Thank you for my detour, reliving my own periods of traumatism. So now imagine my shock. They're going to the lingerie hut in the company. Like, come on now. In a city vehicle, no less. Like, come on. Come on. There's no way I would participate in this at all. And I would think that is the sort of thing you could end up on the 6 o'clock news at some point. If they do an audit or the wrong person goes by the lingerie shack and sees the vehicle with the tabs out front and decides to post this on Instagram, like, oh my, yeah, I would never, ever, ever, ever participate in that. I would let them know that, like, don't even ask. Like, I am never going to participate in this activity. Thank you. Unity. I remember your question was about HR. Unity with other black people on the job. that is not something that I would recommend seeking. That, forgive the metaphor, but like the bar is up way too high, in my opinion. Like professionalism, courtesy. That's what I would strive to have with other black people in the workplace. Like, let's lower that bar, like, substantially. Like, other people, they can have their own code, but it's just been my experience, like, that is asking way too much. And I don't even know, you know, what you mean specifically, but, like, wow, unity, quote unquote, is a hard bar to achieve, even with, like, people that I share blood DNA with, right? It's hard to achieve unity with them. So a black person that is a total stranger that was hired by somebody else, and we're going to have unity in what exactly? We can be courteous.
Right. And I guess, I guess I mean more so along the lines, like, it, you know, I, like I said, I think HR and I think others are starting to really monitor our department, specifically our boss. And if, you know, I'm called into HR and our HR director is a black, you know, non-white person, you know, I just feel, I guess, uncomfortable if they say, have you heard, you know, him say this? Has he ever made this commentary towards you? Because on one hand, I feel, I guess, I don't want to say guilty about him being, you know, reprimanded or terminated, but at the same time, I kind of feel like he kind of brought this on himself, especially considering like the, like now his white subordinates kind of have this against him, so they've stopped, you know, respecting him. Like it's becoming, you know, where they openly disrespect him now, and I don't think he feels like he has any control, because if he says anything to them, then they're going to go back and say, oh, well, he said such and such, or we went here and, or we did this, and he's the supervisor. So he, you know, you're not supposed to get on that level, I guess, with your subordinate. So I just feel awkward about being called in, and I kind of feel like, oh, I'm spilling the beans, and the department's going to look down on me for being the, I don't want to say whistleblower, but the one that's honest about, you know, what's been going on. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? I hope I'm...
It makes total sense. I would say, I guess to finish with that, not unity, just professionalism and courteousness. That's what I would strive for. It seems like from the report, this black male was not being professional in the workplace if he was making these sort of remarks. That's what I just said with the caller who wrote in before, with the black male who was saying, you know, you can have whatever you want, if I can have that dress or something to that effect, saying that sort of thing to anybody in a workplace setting is just not professional. It's not a logical thing to do, in my view. So he was saying, you know, these type of things, very easy to get in trouble. I'm not surprised. I guess I would say it this way. You said that the white fellas, his subordinates, allegedly, he doesn't have control, and they kind of do whatever they want, and you can use the word literally, they can blackmail him. Oh, you think you're going to come in here and boss me around? Well, I'll go and tell them, well, you were in here and he was saying such and such and such, and me too, and blah, blah, blah. He sounded just like Bill Cosby and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, now it was like that from the beginning. Now they can just be more flagrant about it, I guess. It sounds like it's probably been some unjust networking in them talking about what's happening to him and that type of thing in the office, which would seem to undermine, if this is like an ongoing investigation or inquiry, that would seem to undermine the process if there's some talking amongst people in the process and other coworkers. But anywho, with your question, I mean, really? You are the person that would best decide, because I mean the code, and I know some people that say, hey, we are supposed to be about honesty. The system of white supremacy is primarily run by deception, honest at all time. You were there, just report what you heard. He said this, hey, that's what it is. I know some people, they would say, hey, I am not going to do that. Like, this person did incorrect things, yes, and I did hear it. But I am not going to go in and help these white people fire a black person. Like, I am sure that they got, you know, all the evidence and, you know, whatever information they need, that they can do that without my assistance. So I know some people they would not share. Mm-hmm. They would not disclose. In fact, I think Mr. Edward Williams, it was a situation they were trying to get rid of a black person, and they called him in to ask his thoughts on this black person's performance. And he turned around and asked them a question. He asked, what problem are we trying to solve? And that ended the whole meeting. They didn't even want to get his input anymore. So that's one strategy that you can take. But I mean, they might, in this type of situation where it's some sort of accusation that he's been sexually inappropriate, they might go direct to the chase that, oh, yeah, it's been accusations of sexual impropriety, that he said things repeatedly out in public. And if so, then that's got to be dealt with. We can't have a lawsuit, and we've got to have people safe in the environment. Like, that would be a quick bam, question answered. Now back to, did you hear such and such and such on such and such date or at any time? And so, yeah, that would just, you know, you'd have to make a decision about how you want to handle that. Like, I guess other people can give you their thought on what they would do, which, you know, if they would like to do so, feel free. But ultimately, that's kind of when you have to use your own logic about what you think is Yeah.
My situation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I said I always, the caller that, or the person that wrote in before you that talked about hearing that, this black male say that, and now I'm a witness to it. And she said exactly what you're in. That, man, I do not want to be called in to have to be a witness. Well, now I've heard this, and I've got a moral crisis. Now, do I lie to them and say that I didn't hear it? Do I tell the truth and say that I did hear it? And they're going to use this to fire a black person? Like, ugh, like, come on. Like, yeah, I hate it. I hate those type of dilemmas. Like, you just have to try to figure out the best way to proceed. The code book says be honest at all times. I can certainly see not wanting to help racists fire a black person, even if the black person did, you know, was going around saying incorrect sexual things.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll just have to use my logic. And as you mentioned, you know, system of white supremacy is, you know, very unjust, and it's built on dishonesty. So, you know, you kind of, my personal thing is I, you know, do kind of feel, you know, in a bind. They haven't questioned me yet, but I, you know, suspect it's coming, you know, fairly quickly. So I'll just have to, you know, use my logic to decide what's the best decision. But it probably is wiser to err on the side of just being honest about it if I'm, you know, asked about what's been going on, or, you know, if I heard a particular statement or saw something. So thank you for answering my question, and thank you for the show, Gus.
Much obliged. Ginger can be good for a cough. Ginger, drink more water. You can even boil a little ginger, have ginger tea, and then drink a little water. That can be good. Wintertime, it's stuffy and what have you. You can let us know. I always appreciate updates. You can let us know if they ask to speak to you at all and how that goes. It's always good. If there are listeners, if you've been in a similar situation and want to share how you've handled it or thoughts on how you would deal with that, feel free. Like I said, you know, that's kind of your judgment call in terms of how you want to deal with that. The code says honesty is what we are supposed to do, and just telling the truth. I do know Mr. Williams, when presented with that situation before, because I think he said they were asking about a black person, and it seemed like it was the type of thing, maybe we're going to get rid of this person. What do you think about this person? And he said this was a person that he had had some run-ins with. Like, this was not his pal on the job that they were asking him about, as opposed to saying, man, can you believe that hussy? She came in and messed up my paperwork and took this and took that. Like, as opposed to all of that, it just, oh. What problem are we trying to solve? And I got that. I wrapped everything. Well, you know, we've got it. Thank you. We'll talk to you later, Mr. Williams. Good day. What a coon. Get somebody. Like, and they went, I don't know if they fired her or not, but that can be one way of dealing with it. I do want to make sure I am explicit. That sort of conduct in the workplace is not really in the workplace or beyond is not acceptable. I just said repeatedly, not even making compliments about wardrobe or anything, but I mean, that is ridiculous to be talking that way at all. So Consequences could be natural. White people can make that happen quickly. See Bill Cosby. See R. Kelly. Blah, 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 blah. White people can deal with that without our assistance. But yeah, it is always, I mean, that's hindsight, but always best stay out of those predicaments to begin with. At least it'll be a false charge where I have a reputation. I'm serious. I don't make those type of, I am not into bawdy humor at all in the workplace. I'm serious, quiet, focused on the job. Where's my calculator? Did folks have a thought on how they would deal with this type of situation?
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter.
Yes, there is some different circumstances. I would go into myself. If I spotted the activity, in my experience from the outset, I would attempt to always physically remove myself from the activity. Whether it's the incorrect conversations, I would remove myself from that immediate environment. Definitely wouldn't get in no car and go anywhere with them. If I had a relationship with that person and I knew of the activity, I would let that person know. First of all, once again, I would ask them, can I talk to you? And wait for their reply. And then I would inform that person, that what you're saying and doing, it probably is inappropriate based on the rules and regulations of the job. And I don't want to be placed in between anything that may happen to you. That's why I'm informing you of it. And I'll leave it at that. So whenever I have to make a decision myself, it will be clear, at least to that person, that myself and that person had a conversation prior to it. You know, about me stating that what they were saying and doing was inappropriate. Those are basically my thoughts. I've had some experiences to where some coworkers who were actually going to the crack house. I knew them well enough to give them rides away from the fire station. I wouldn't take them to the crack house directly to it. You know, I just drop them off on the corner somewhere and didn't care where they went. That's their business on where they went, you know, as far as they're concerned. And, it would be a pact that I would have between myself and that person or persons as far as what their activity is. And, that sort of thing. If I knew them well enough, I would have a conversation with them. If I didn't know them, I would try to separate myself from them. That's it.
Context of white supremacy. Sensible. Sensible. I especially like bringing the policy and procedure into it. Like for all of those, if you decide, like, I have enough of a rapport with this black person that I'm going to attempt to say something to them about the comments that they've been making, grab that their employee manual and flip it. Did you read the first paragraph on page 39 that talks about sexual remarks in the workplace? And you can have it underlined or just put a star next to it and just point it to him really quick. Say, did you read that before? And just have him reread it again really quick. Okay. And I think about that comment that you made. Now, do you think anybody at this company who maybe overheard that, because again, it's not just the person that you're talking to, might hear that and think, hey, this violates page 39 of our policy and procedure. That way you get a question in. Always great to get at least one question. And then you can just add everything that I said before. Like, yeah, I don't want to be called in where I got to testify. Did I hear this? You heard about Bill Cosby? You saw that Lifetime special on R. Kelly? You know, just go from there. But yeah, pull in the policy and procedure. I think this could be in violation. Check that out. And yeah, think about that if you're going to say something. And then, as retired firefighter said, then you have a record that I did speak to this person to try to curtail this behavior, but they persisted. And at that point, trying to remove yourself from the situation, that might even be something that I might have to put in my workplace diary. If I've talked to this person and they persisted and I get up and leave, if this is something where I feel like, oh yeah, this could become a Bill Cosby type thing where this might, everybody might have to come in and testify. And did you hear this? And what did you hear? And that sort of thing. I might have to have my diary like, oh yeah, I think, not that I'm sure this might be for public, but I mean, this is just for my records. Like, oh yeah, I think this is going to get serious. And I did talk to this person about this on, you know, Friday, February 21, 12 p.m. Talk to them. This is what I said. This was their response. Moving forward. Okay, I come in. It's Monday the 24th, and this person is still making the comments. So at 12 o'clock, they started into a bawdy joke, said blah, blah, blah. I got to excuse myself. Like, I might have to record all of that. I think that might be the best thing to do if it persists. You talk to the person, it persists, and you think, oh, yeah, this could be something where I end up in HR and have to give, you know, a statement for the record. I'm going to have my own notes on this situation. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Draftomania, did you have commentary? Should be with us.
Yes. Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. Gus and callers and listeners. As far as the situation is concerned, I guess it would just depend on the type of relationship that I had with that individual. I really don't, you know, I guess it would just be subjective regarding if I would say something to that individual or not. Like you said, it's just a situation. If I didn't have a relationship with that individual, I probably wouldn't say anything. But, you know, if I felt that, you know, I could talk to that individual, I might say something. Like I said, it would just depend. I basically wanted to share about my own situation at my workplace. And when you were speaking about the situation in regarding the gentleman that how you can have a job doing one thing in the office and have your own office and everything like that, and then you can be reduced down to having, you know, you know, getting reduced down to maybe just doing something that you totally don't, didn't, you know, doing the type of work that you really were not doing before, or it's supposed to be like downsized or something that's considered degrading. But I don't consider any job, whether you're doing janitorial or whatever, if you have a job and you're doing it with the best respect that you can have for yourself, and, you know, you're getting paid for it. And, you know, that's what you have to do. That's even going to, if you have to work at McDonald's. If you have to work at McDonald's, you have to work at McDonald's. I don't look at it like it's demeaning or whatever, because sometimes they'll do that, take you from one grade up here, and then you will get knocked down to another one. So I've been in that situation and am in that situation. But it seems like I'm getting paid much more what I'm doing now than when I was, you know, had my own office and didn't have to worry about anybody. So that, I just wanted to say that about that. But the situation, workplace incident I had this week was, I've kind of basically had an opportunity to really, I guess, let the whole concept of a code, I guess sometimes, you know, like for me, or, you know, I'm quite sure others can identify with this. When you learn about things, you know, initially when you're learning about it, it just takes time for you to somewhat like just absorb and the information and just continue to do research before it just kind of resonates with you and before you, you know, before you really understand exactly what that may mean to you personally. So at the job, you know, I've had to tell based on what I do, I told like one of the young, you know, individuals that, you know, they can't have their feet on the furniture. So as she was leaving out, basically what happened was she ended up calling me out of my name. She called me a you know, when somebody calls you out of your name, but they're not doing it to your face. They're doing it and within earshot for you to hear it. And, you know, I just was able to take a look at, like, my growth and development and see how far I have come, because there would have been a time I would have reacted when I didn't have a cold and I didn't know. And, you know, I was, you know, very reactionary to things outside of me, and I would just react, you know. I was just, you know, reacting to everything around me. So when she made a statement about me doing my job and me basically doing what was told for me to do, to like ask students to take their feet off the furniture or whatever like that, she said, yeah, well, this bee, she gonna end up, you know, having to do this over again no matter what. So I stood there like, and I heard her say what she said, but what I did, I just like, you know, continue. I went to the restroom and I said, well, you know what? I looked at it like this, you know what? I have to do this all day while I'm here. With the 8 hours that I'm here, and this is what I'm getting paid to do. So it doesn't matter if I have to do it 101 times, because when I'm here, that's what I'm there to do. So I did not react. I didn't respond. I took note of what she said. I then thought about it, because I had a time to stop, think, and just analyze, you know, like just take an inventory of the situation. I said, you know what? I said, you know, I looked at other incidents in my life, other cases and on other jobs where I've had situations where when you're trying to implement a policy or tell people about a rule or, you know, something that's supposed to be done or not done, and, you know, how it's caused conflict. Then it came to mind about minimize contact to minimize conflict. And I said to myself, I said, you know what, Lori, if, I just said my real name, if I don't have to engage in this, you know, by telling these people what they can and cannot do, then don't do it. You know, just do your job. I just implemented a new code. I said, you know what? I am not, from this day forward, I am not going to be telling anybody what they can't do. If, you know, this is not my stuff, this is their stuff. If they want to, you know, put their feet up all over the stuff, that's their business. I'm not going to allow myself to be disturbed by it. I'm not going to allow myself to get entrapped or get caught up into any type of conflict with individuals over something that does not even belong to me. This belongs to the job. So the next day when I went to work and I saw the same thing happening, I didn't say anything. I just, you know, continued to do my job as usual, did what I needed to do, and just didn't say anything at all, because I'm just looking at, like, how you know, you can get caught up into, you know, trying to, like, enforce certain rules, and then you end up getting into conflict with victims. You know, because these are the people that I'm dealing with. You're ending up getting into a conflict with the victims over something that doesn't even belong to you, over things that, you know, this is all of the job stuff. Like you said, none of the desk is not mine. Nothing at that place is mine. So I should not allow myself to be so attached to anything where it's going to get me, put me in a position to be in conflict with anyone. So my new code is, from now on, I have nothing to say about what somebody can and cannot do. And that's basically, that was, I guess, my epiphany or my, you know, that, no, I'm just not going to do it anymore. It's not worth it. It's all, you know, I'm not getting paid enough to be going through arguments or going through, being abused, being name called, even though I have no control over what people call me or say and anything like that. But what I do have control over is the fact that I don't have to put myself in a position to allow that to happen. So my new code is not the same as thing. And that's basically all I had to share. Thank you.
Much obliged, Draftomania. I'm sorry you had to endure that in your workspace, even though that is a part of what we're supposed to be doing, adjusting our code as we learn and go through these experiences and what have you, and just try to adjust our code to figure out the best way to do things where we're not being mistreated, not being harmed. If I get one more opportunity to detour from my personal work experience hearing this, just being in a work environment where you are required to like govern how other black people function, like what they do, what they can't do, like rules and regulations about how they place their body in space, like that's a part of the job. I've said this many times. I worked at a black comedy club, black owned comedy club in Atlanta. And that would be one part of the job for certain folks. If you're working at the front door, you have to tell, you know, these are the rules of the club, what you have to do, drink minimum, blah, 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 where you're supposed to be at, all that stuff. The club where I never heard of Neely Fuller Jr. or Dr. Welsing, but they had codified in a black owned comedy club where there was exactly one white employee, they had codified that the best code of conduct is to put the white man at the front door and have him be the one to tell black people about the rules and regulations of the club, because it will minimize arguing and complaining. They will just listen to the white man. That was the code that they had worked out. And just for detail, they didn't go grab a white man who had a tuxedo and, you know, sparkling good looks, could be on the cover of Men's Health or GQ magazine. Oh, no. They grabbed a white man who had a drug problem and would do drugs to the point that he would be sticking chicken wings in the front cash register at the club where he's supposed to be telling the black patrons what to do, what not to do, what the rules are. He is so out of his mind on drugs, he is putting chicken wings in the cash register. Had to be sent home. They lost the white man prop for the evening. This is true. This happened. I'm not, there were many jokes at the comedy club. This is not one. Now, that is to rules and regulations. With all of that, it would be better to have a drugged up opioid dog food white man. As long as he's classified as white, you tell the rules because they will accept it better and not fight back, as opposed to having a black person do it and then it's going to be a squabble and a fight and maybe I'll do it, maybe I won't, blah, 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 blah. That is what domination looks like. Mm-hmm. That is what power looks like in the system of racism. So that's one. If it was a white person, maybe her response would have been different about, you know, put your foot down. Maybe, who knows? I will say that I have been in work settings. Like, I remember I worked in the school system in California, and the school system rule was nobody can say nigger. Children, staff, nobody. If the children say it, you're supposed to discipline them. Even if it's a black person saying it to another black person, that is not allowed across the board. So we had to explain it to them almost verbatim in that way. You didn't have to, well, yeah, you didn't say nigger, but, you know, you get it. So we would have black students. They would say, you know, oh, nigger, blah, blah, blah. Or they'd be talking to another black person, and, you know, they're like, hey, you know, that's whatever it's going to be, whatever the punishment for that is supposed to be. And I remember some of them like, man, you Uncle Tom Coon, you're a black person. You're supposed to know. You know I wasn't trying to. And all of that is punitive, too. So you're supposed to punish that. And then after all of that ends, we're like, well, I would just tell them, hey, this is their rule. Nobody is allowed to say nigger here. I am not allowed to say it. You're not allowed to say it. Those are the rules. If I do not enforce it, they'll just come and fuss at me, and then they'll bring in somebody else who does tell you, hey, you cannot say that. That's exactly how that I explained it to them. Now, I wouldn't explain all that to the person about putting their feet down on the chair, but that's what I'd be thinking in my mind, like, because I have been in some places where that is exactly what will happen. If you don't tell them to take their feet down, the white people will come and fuss at you. What is wrong with you? You let these coons come in here and put their feet up, and go tell them. And if you don't do it, if I have seen it again, and I'll get, that's what they'll do sometimes. So all of that to say, I do regularly say with workplace racism, it's not about being emotional, that racists have conditioned us to be anti-black. So that type of response, that's white people's fault anyway. That does not make it any more pleasant or easy to endure being spoken to in that way when you're just doing what you're told and trying to get through your 8 hours as best you can. If that works, if you're in a job where they aren't that concerned about it and nobody cares, they can put their feet up and they're not going to fuss at you, great. That is fine. And I've seen some people where that's the code that they adopted for their workplace too, that I'm not going to fuss at these black people for everything, like, whatever. I know what the rules are, but as much of that as I do not have to yell at, you know, other black people and ignore that, cool in the gang. I'm going to let them be and just get through my shift so that I can get my little paycheck and get on about my business. If that works, grand. But I have seen where sometimes they will fuss at black people for not fussing at other black people as part of the job. Let's see. If other folks have thoughts, suggestions, number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have suggestions on what's been shared thus far, how you would deal with those situations, and or if you have your own situation, even if it's some things that work well to minimize conflict, that is always welcome. Other folks, if you have thoughts, proceed.
Can I be heard again?
Retired firefighter.
Yes, sir. That is one of the primary reasons on why the retired firefighter never even took a promotional exam, let alone talking about taking one to the level that I can get promoted. It wasn't worth the extra money for me to be responsible for other people. When I started driving the truck, that's a different story. If somebody is doing something that would endanger the safety of myself or the others on the truck, that's a different situation. And I would approach that person directly. And if I didn't get a favorable response, I would go to others, and I would let that person know, you know, as far as that concerned. But as far as on a promotional exam and you become a lieutenant or a captain or a chief, now you are responsible for basically writing people up who are determined they're going to be coming to work late, coming to work with their uniform, look like it just pulled out the garbage can or something like that and showed up to work, you know, or drunk, you know, or high, you know, on duty, that sort of thing, you know. And I didn't want to go through all of that, you know. I don't condemn anybody else for doing it if they want to do it. But with me, it wasn't worth the extra money. They didn't pay me enough money to go through that. Whatever would be the extra salary, it wouldn't compensate for the stress that would be on me. I put it that way, you know. So, yeah, that's one of the main reasons. But as far as that couch is concerned, they can tear it down. All I care, I can care less, you know. As far as that concerned, you know, and a fire station has furniture just like a house, and you know, as far as that concerned. But yeah, That would be my attitude towards it. That's it.
Much obliged. Like I said, because I see the validity. Absolutely. Like, whatever. You can burn the couch as far as I'm concerned. I totally. It's not mine, and whatever. I'm not going to be here to fuss at black people. And I have, like I said, I have seen those settings with this. Oh, you're going to let them burn the couch up? Well, we will get in someone responsible who will value our property and take care of the couch and make sure the people, like, I've seen both of those. So just kind of have to figure out, you know, which type of setting you're in and what you are comfortable doing. Just figure out a code exactly as Draftomania said, figuring out a code that will work for you, because that was what she said. Retired firefighter?
Right. But like I said, if that person is doing something that would endanger myself or, in my situation, other members of the crew, you know, that you know, we work together, that's a different story. I would approach that person directly and ask them to cease and desist. And if they continue, and I would say, if you continue to do it, then I would take it to someone else. I would let them know that, you know, and I wouldn't care on what their response is, you know, because on the job that I was on, people can get killed, you know, by somebody doing something incorrect, you know, that sort of thing. So, and everybody knows that. Everybody understood that. Not necessarily means that everybody cared, but everybody understood that, you know, that concept on a job like that, you know, as far as from my experience are concerned. And I didn't have any problems from that particular point. I put it that way. I talked to a younger coworker. I had a relationship with him in response to, and he's young. He was young enough to be my offspring, you know. And so, like I said, I had a relationship with him off duty, and he was coming to work with, you know, like his uniform. He pulled it out of the dirty clothes hamper. You know, that sort of thing. And you know, it's had a conversation where, you know, you kind of like got to, you know, do a little bit better for yourself. You know, you're going to start having some problems if you continue to go in the direction that you're going. And I'm just having this conversation with you, you know, from the standpoint to whereas to head off on what can be coming to you in the future. You know, and it must have been some sort of effect on him, because he responded favorably by improving on that particular subject matter, and also coming to work on time. Yeah. So, you know, it could work out sometimes.
Obliged, retired firefighter. I think Nat King Cole, God bless the dead, he had a song called Straighten Up and Fly Right. That is the goal. You have those conversations with another victim of racism in a workplace setting, that they will straighten up and fly right. You won't have to have that conversation again, and it won't waste your time and energy to have engaged in all of that in the first place. Any other folks with suggestions on how they would deal with that type of situation? Anybody else? Draftomania's situation? Grand. Let's see. That conversation of just, if you can share, catch something in advance, it's always great. I think with Draftomania's situation, it seemed like that was not possible. So that's not always the type of case. And we said people are not always receptive. So, you know, it's not always possible to, you're not there to save every victim of racism. You can't, sometimes you can't even, you know, help yourself. So you're just trying to do the best that you can from a united, independent standpoint. If it's possible, if the rapport is there, you can say something and it can have that sort of effect. Grand. not always going to be the case. You just have to judge as best you can. Let's see. Give out the number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I will get in one of our other emails from a listener, B in Toronto. She wrote up a report just about different tactics that were being used against her in the workplace. Loneliness, that was what was said, the black teachers, loneliness. I said, well, they will isolate you, ostracize. That is the word she uses. She says social ostracism tactics I've experienced were a combination of verbal and nonverbal body language used to convey to others to not associate with me when I was at work. They include the following. Number one, while I'm at work doing what would be regular work duties, I would notice the perpetrators would make a confused look to others as if I was not to do the work duties that are outlined in my work contract. Number two, the workplace I was at had a drop-down policy, meaning any employee could select a desk to work at, provided it was available. There would be signs that employees could adjust to indicate if it was vacant or occupied. For close to a year that I was there, I had different employees ask me, "Is this where you are sitting?" Despite the fact that all employees are aware that the company has a drop-down policy, the underlying message I got from it was that there is no space for me because I do not belong here. Number three, when I would ask a team member for information on how to complete a work task, I would be advised in a rehearsed preamble, "We work as a team here and we get things done as a team." To give it context, the information I am requesting does not require a team to complete, as we had our own case file to work on. There were no prior concerns regarding me being a part of the team, or if there was, they never were brought to my attention. They would not state the rehearsed statement if I was alone with them, only when others were around to hear it. With them doing this, two things were happening. They were excluding me, basically stating that I am not part of the team, and B, they were alleging that I was not a team player. Number four, there were many setups that the perps would employ to attempt to get a reaction. One of them was threats. It was a workplace mobbing, and that is why I left. One of the colleagues would say within earshot, "If she doesn't watch out, she will be stepping on a lot of toes around here." The threat was they would be sabotaging my professional relationships in the workplace, to which they did. As it was dropped down, I would move to another spot in the office. The perps and their supporters would literally stalk me around the office. Not all at once, but one or two, sometimes three, would make the rounds to see where I was sitting. Soon as they found out where I was sitting, then the negative remarks would be in earshot. At times, they would ask each other, "Is she listening?" And then another would respond, "I know she's listening." Some would ask me a question to which my answer would be no. As soon as I responded no and walked back to my cubicle to continue working, the same person would report to their clique that I had an attitude. Literally, the question would be, "Do you know where the paper clips are?" My answer would be no, and then accused of slighting them. Let's see. Last one, number five, I would receive stares more like glares. There would be some persons from the perps group that would be in the aisle and just glare at me. At first, it was unnerving because I did not know why they were doing this. Then I caught on. I would ignore them. That is frequently what I suggest. Planned ignoring, they call this, where you recognize, like, oh, they're just doing this to get a response and nonsense. Go about your business. And I would log that workplace journal. But I would just go about your business once you recognize that they're doing these type of things, planned ignoring, because sometimes the coming and making these statements in earshot or just kind of loitering in the area near where you work at, and, you know, making the comments or just looking sometimes, all of that is done to get a response. Not respond. I would have mirrors up. We talked about that too. Mirrors at your cubicle. That way people are not jumping out and staring you and that sort of thing, where you can have a little bit more periphery vision, be a little bit more aware of your surroundings. But yeah, I wouldn't waste any time, you know, getting in stare downs and that sort of thing. If anything, I would speak, acknowledge them when they're doing their glare downs. Evening, Margaret. Everything okay? You need anything? Oh, okay. Just checking in. And I go right and be as pleasant as I just sounded. Okay. And just check. Go back to work. No problem. Boop, boop, boop. Getting work done. Getting work done. I will stop there. But these are common tactics. I suspect others who are listening in have experienced these types of conducts, behaviors on the job. Sounds like there's probably some unjust networking here as well, so that they can coordinate these activities. She had said they had like a rehearsed preamble. Their little spiel that they would have together to say to her about why they couldn't give her constructive information. Just be part of the team, okay? Man, what's wrong with you? Unjust networking, probably. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Email untiljustice@gmail.com. Drop a line if you have thoughts you'd like to share. We can read them on the air. Others who dialed in, if you have a hand up, proceed. Let's see.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I want to start out my first report with this was a conversation that took place at least a few months ago. I was in the judge's chambers, and me and the chief judge and the J.A., was talking about how to, I guess, greet or speak to a judge when you see them in public or in other places outside of the courthouse. So I said, I don't mention them being a judge or your honor. I just kind of just speak to them or whatever. So he was like, he heard that some judges prefer that way, and then the judicial assistant says that she heard that some judges would, I guess, prefer that you, I guess, call them judge or your honor, or judge such and such. And then just really quick, I just remember saying, man, maybe there ought to be a code of what to do, huh? When it comes to if you see them somewhere, like in a grocery store or something. And then she said, this is what a white woman said. Well, I don't know if we can make it a code because we all aren't doing the same thing. So I thought that was kind of powerful that, you know, that she said it like that, because that definitely is a part of white code, is a grandiose amount of white people doing the same thing for an effective result, especially when it comes to practicing white supremacy. So it's like, well, I don't know if we could do a code for that, because we'd all have to do the same thing. I say, yeah, you have a good point. My next one is, these next few ones are definitely ones I could submit to do the planned ignoring response to. This one is, I was in the break room. I was eating a salad. So they had this tacky ice cream social for Valentine's Day last week. So they had all kinds of Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, ice cream, donuts, all, you know, I mean, the worst of the worst. And this white guy, he got it out of the refrigerator, right? And this older white woman got up, and I guess they were talking about food. And first he said, the guy said, oh, yeah, you know, I do like pizza. And she says, oh, you do? And says, even more, I really like ice cream. Okay? And he says, yeah, I do like ice cream. I'm an ice cream slut. And he says, also, I'm an ice cream hoochie mama. All right? So I'm thinking, now, I've never heard that kind of term ever. So, you know, what comparison are you applying this with this term hoochie mama with ice cream? So nobody said anything, and they just kept on talking with each other, and they walked out of the break room. So I definitely documented that down. My next one is, I was sitting at the desk, and I was on the phone with the customer. And a Click member, I think one of the top Click members, one of the highest tier ones, all right, like the one that everybody acknowledges. This white woman, she comes in and she says, oh, well, it smells nice over here. Okay. And she walks past the black female coworker that I have, and she comes toward me, and she walks out of the door, and she says, oh, I know it has to be you because boys stink. I was on the phone, and as she was exiting the area, and the black female said, well, what is it you said again? And she said, I said, I was just saying that I noticed that, I guess, it smells good over here. It must be you that smells good because boys stink. Boys stink. Okay, so I guess he didn't hear me because he's on the phone. So, see, that's it again, trying to get a response out of me. So that was another one I had to jot down. And that was this next one was reported to me by another conversation of workplace racism earlier this week, where in the traffic department, a white woman said that she doesn't like the use of the N-word, or she doesn't like the N-word. So the black staff member at the front counter, she's like, what did you just say? Oh, you know, I don't like the M word, like M. And she switched it from N to M. Now, that's not the same thing. She says, oh, you know, I don't like the M word for moist, M-O-I-S-T. That is such strong codification. And, you know, we both agreed on that. And she said this so loud, like, can you please say that again? I said, I didn't like the M word for moist. So I think she said N for nigga. So this person got up from the seat at the front counter, and I guess she went to the bathroom, and the other black female asked her, is that what she said, the N word? And she said, yeah, but she claimed that she said the M word. So, and this is a person who also has a history, and she said her own daughter was saying the word nigga at school or something like that. So she's still obviously a racist suspect, and I think she's lying. My next one is, there was a white person that came in, and he was doing some very sexual flirting with the black female that took his passport picture. And the guy was like, oh, you know, so what do I have to do? You know, do I go over here to take my picture? And she's like, yeah, you know, just sit on the stool. And he was like, well, do I got to, you know, take my shirt off or something? Do I have to take my shirt off? And she was like, no, you ain't got to do that. And he says, well, do you want me to flex? Like, no, don't do that, or you're going to rip your shirt. You know, I guess so-called going along with it. So when the picture is taken, he says, what did he say? He said, are you going to buy me lunch? And she's like, no, I'm not going to buy you lunch. We don't get paid enough for that or something. And he was like, well, how much does this cost? Is this picture about $30? And she was saying, well, we don't get any of that money anyways. So if I come before 11 o'clock, are you going to buy me lunch? And she's like, no, I can't do that. And this racist says, oh, no, you're supposed to say yes. You are supposed to say yes. That's what he said. So now the context is there are other people, there are other customers. They were all white. They kept looking over laughing. Okay. You know, and now, and this, you was just talking about the Me Too situation, and we're in the Me Too era. So he, as he was leaving, he says, well, you know, you don't work too hard. You don't want to be too tired by the weekend. So I jotted all of that down so I could remember that language. And, you know, nothing else is said about that, you know. I had one more. There was a joke that was shared with me. And it seemed like all of these jokes start with somebody going into a bar. So this non-white, non-black female, I guess, was included in one of these emails because there's been a big issue with the unjust networking and the emails that they're sending, mainly to click. So she said the joke started out with, okay, so a sandwich walks into a bar. And I said, okay. And she tried to do the punchline, and she couldn't do it. She failed to do the punchline. So I said, where did you get that joke? Because if y'all remember, it was a joke she shared about the white horse being falling into the mud. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but she said that I got the joke from the girls. And I thought the click. So about maybe an hour later, about maybe 2 o'clock today, she sent an email and it had the image with the joke on it. So the joke was a sandwich walks into a bar and the bartender says, sorry, we don't serve food here. So that's the punch, basically. So I'm thinking that's one of the forms that somewhat that people wouldn't think is too inappropriate is just a play on words, like a double entendre, triple entendre, or whatever. But usually that starts to go to something racist. Somebody walks into a bar. So she forwarded me the email, right? And it had three names, a click, three females in the click. And they included her in it. So I know they're sending these kind of emails on a, or have been for the last couple of years. So there's been a big to do about that. And I'm going to be definitely paying attention to what comes out about that because I definitely highly suspect there's some racist content that they definitely don't want me to find out about because it's, man, my goodness. But that's all I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged. Caller in Florida. We'll move slightly north and catch non-Clemson grad next. Always a treat at the courthouse. Wow, let's see.
Mr. Fuller, some years back, he said that he, on his job, he would always perk up when white people would come to tell racist jokes, because he said sometimes it would start, it would be black people on the job talking amongst themselves, joking around amongst themselves and telling jokes or whatever. And he said a white person would be there and they're laughing along with it, blah, blah, blah. And then they say, hey, I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna have some of the colored fun. And they would hop in and say, you heard the one, the colored boy walks in. Oh, wait a minute. And he said they would get halfway into it and be like, oh, wait a minute. I think it's a nigger joke in there. And they would stop. And he said it happened a whole bunch of times where they started, they would get halfway into it and be like, oh. And he said, like, if you heard like the first half, it would be enough that you would know, like, oh yeah, this is supposed to be a nigger joke. Like, he's accustomed to being around other racists and being able to have a good laugh. That I suspect what you said when she was kind of coming out with, oh, guess what happens when the sandwich goes into the bar? And she's like, oh, I'd like to see this. He says, is that one? I hope that one isn't one of the ones where, does that one end where they say nigger about? Okay, I think this is a good one. I think I can just, that's what it sounds like to me. Like, we have shared enough of our little nigger jokes. And remember Mary Ann Tweedy? She was the clerk at the courthouse in Ferguson. And that's what they did all day long, was swap nigger jokes about that nigger President Obama and that ape Michelle Obama. And, oh, you want me to fix a ticket for this white man? No problem. Get rid of that. You mean that coon in the White House? I can't stand him. And that coon Michelle Obama, that was all day long at the courthouse in Ferguson. Mary Ann Tweedy, you can look up the name. But that's what it sounded like to me. Like, and that's my thoughts exactly, because that's exactly who they are accustomed to. No, we don't serve coloreds. We don't serve coons. That's exactly what the framework of it would be. It just have, oh, it's a sandwich this time. let's see. The man, that was like the black female that works there to do the passport photos. I feel like I've been doing so much talking about passports and get your passport and had to take my passport photo, even though I didn't do mine at the courthouse. I'm sorry she had to experience that, but that is like routine in the system of white supremacy, like routine back to, like, you know, in the cotton field routine, like centuries. Like, that is the totality in many respects of white supremacy, racism being raping and sexual exploitation of black people, males, females, children, you name it. To be at the courthouse and to have to endure that, like, publicly, because I was thinking the whole time, like, you don't know, I don't know if this black female is married, she's a mom, she has a fiance, a boyfriend, like, to just be talking to her, like, you want me to take my shirt off? Like, is that how I'd be talking to a married woman? Is that how I'd be talking to a mom? Like, what? I don't even know you. I don't even know your name. Like, and I'm at the courthouse again. We're not at the brothel. We're not at the strip club. I'm trying to get a passport. I thought this was serious information. Like, I was not flirting and talking slick at the passport window. Like, they had just frisked me and went through they searched my bag and everything else. Like, it was a serious matter. Like, it was not time for joking around and let me flirt and, you know, all this. Aren't you supposed to go? And just all of it. Like, do you want to go out again? I don't know if this, am I talking to somebody's wife? Am I talking to somebody's fiance? You're supposed to say yes, and this is something to snicker about again. Now, I say this on a regular basis now. If you can imagine, this was a little white woman. It could even be a tubby white woman working behind the desk. And this is a black male. Let it be Kobe Bryant, Morgan Freeman, Bill Cosby. You want me to take my shirt off? Hey, don't work too hard. We're supposed to go out this weekend, right? What do you mean, no? You're supposed to say yes. At the courthouse? They got the sergeant. He threatened to shank you, and you work there. This happens at the courthouse, and we just sit around and joke like that's just... That is the system of white supremacy, where it is nearly impossible for someone to get the death penalty for raping a black female. even get charged for raping a black female. That is exactly why, for that sort of thing to happen publicly. Incidentally, I would say, and again, that's why we talk about the importance of having a code around sexual misconduct in the workplace, because it's so common, it's likely to happen. Already be going through in your mind, somebody comes in a workplace setting and they do this type of thing, they're flirting, can we go out on a date? Already have your, that's one, Walter Beach III. Cut it at the knees. And I mean, if you work at the courthouse, the passport office, oh, you can be ruthless. Sir, do you want this passport? Question Lang. Sir, do you want this passport? All right, then. Let's get back to business. Like, and I wouldn't say anything else. Like, I'm not going to hear this for 30 seconds. You're going to talk to me the same way like you were talking to a white woman who was here with some respect and some professionalism. We're getting the pass. Again, we're not at the bar. Already be running that through in your mind because it's likely to happen. Somebody asks you out for a date. You can do that for a non-white person, white person, whatever, who asks you out on a date or any of the flirting, anything like that. Cut that at the knees. Cut that at the knees. Because exactly what he just said, it just continues and continues and continues. If that's somebody that you work with, they don't just have that one interaction. They'll have another shot tomorrow and another shot on Monday and another shot on. You got to cut that at the knees immediately and write that down. Workplace red. And that's supposed to be in policy and procedure too. In fact, I would even ask, I'd say, hey, next time we have a meeting, are we supposed to endure this sort of thing? Somebody comes in and is flirting and asking for a date and take my shirt off and that sort of thing. What's the policy and procedure on sexually inappropriate remarks from clients who come in to patronize the courthouse? I would even add, or your workplace. Let's see, next. The ice cream social. I just was talking to a victim of racism today about those work environments where they will just dump food on you. Man, they will Chick-fil-A and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Baskin Robbins and you name it, fajitas and tacos and fried chicken. They will pile it up. Donuts, that's a big one. They will just pile it up on you. It's Valentine's, so they'll get chocolate. They might even have a fondue. Really do it up. I would have a code. I am here to work. I am not here for snacking, hanging out, grazing, call it, with coworkers. That's not why I'm here. I don't care what they're having. Pizza party time, ice cream social time, whatever. They might even find out that you're vegan and have vegan snack time. I'm cool. I'm not here for eating and fraternizing. This is not sixth grade where we go hang out with excitement in the cafeteria. And what did your mom put in your... What? Am I 12? Come on. And eating correctly. I'm just trying to drink. I can't even get through the day without them sabotaging my water. Much less now we got to go in and frolic to eat bad food. Like, nah, get that under control. I have my own food. I'm, you know, regulated about my diet. I'm not going to be a dog that you just wag my emotions around. Like, oh my goodness, it's pretzel day on the planet. Oh my God, it's fried chicken. Come on, come on. The ice cream sled. And this, the other component is the conduct. Now, I go to hang out for the ice cream. So, okay, I get my two scoops. I got my chocolate, my sprinkles, my whipped cream. And, oh, I love, I'm an ice cream slut. Now I got to get out my workplace journal. I'm an ice cream hoochie. Are we at the courthouse again? I'm confused. Are we again? Are we at the brothel? Are we at the bar? Like, what is going on? Like, the type of language that's being used. Because I wouldn't even want to hang out with that. Like, I'm cool. I'm going back to get work done. My stomach has even turned about ice cream. And a lot of folks are lactose intolerant anyway. You don't need to be consuming all that dairy nonsense anyway. But just speaking in a professional manner, you'll find that's very common. I wouldn't use that language. And then if you follow up and say, oh, she's such an ice cream hoochie, she's such an ice cream slut, oh man, somebody hears you say it. R. Kelly, Bill Cotton. In fact, she might even come around and get an attitude about you saying, well, it was just a joke last week. And it didn't sound like you were joking. And I'm not comfortable with that sort of language in a workplace. Let's see. The white woman, I think she's a part of the clique, the white woman who came through. I said, oh, it smells good in here. It must be you, pointing at the black female, because boys stink. And she repeated it. She said, they will often say things, at least that's my conclusion. Racists will often say things, especially in a work context where they're just trying to get a response out of you. Sometimes they'll be talking to somebody else, but it's in earshot so that you can hear it. Sometimes it might be nonverbal. Lots of different ways that they can do things. They're just trying to get a response. And I think we just had a dialogue about who's classified as a man and a woman in the system of white supremacy. You don't have to listen to Gus T. Racist man, racist woman, they can show you better than I can tell you who is a man and who is a woman in the system of white supremacy. Frequently, they let us know directly who the men and women are and who they are not in the system. And then, you got anything to say about that? Boys? Gals? I'll repeat myself. Boys, they smell bad. Okay. And then I go about my business. That's racist woman, not confused about racism. I might put that one in my workplace journal and continue. Let's see. Oh, and the N-word thing, that's so slick. White women slick on the job. She comes by and said twice, boys smell bad. And then the other one, man, that N-word in the workplace. And then you come, what did you say? Oh, I said the M-word. I don't like using the M-word. See, moist in the workplace. Moist, M-O-I-S-T, moist, M-word. The slickness in the workplace. Now, I say, I call in Florida here at the courthouse. He has white women who have admitted, hey, I run experiments on you niggers to see how you respond to things. This could have been an experiment. Now I'm going to just test this because he said he had the white woman who came in and she just met. You know, I hate how in Huckleberry Finn they just got nigger splashed on. I just hate it. How do you write a book and just nigger this, nigger that, nigger Jim, nigger that, nigger this? I just hate it. What? Are we in the lot? I thought we were at the courthouse. I just came to get my marriage license. What are we doing talking about an evaluation of Huckleberry Finn? And I said, they will do things like that just to get a response out of you. Are you going to launch into a tirade about Huckleberry Finn? What do you have to say about the N-word, and particularly anything like that where they're just randomly bringing up an excuse so that they can say nigger in the workplace? I don't have anything to say at all. And then on this one, oh, yeah, the N-word, yes. Oh, M-word, yes, M-word, moist, yes, that's that. And then she's taking, yes, taking notes, see, niggers thought they were going to be slick over here and try and catch me, got that. And they unjust networking where he's infamous in the workplace, like we got him thinking he's going to go up and report me for saying something, put that one down, could just be an experiment. So they are super crafty in the workplace, just be mindful of little things like that. Super slick. That is not an accident. That is not a coincidence. That is white people practicing racism. M-word. Indeed. Much obliged. Caller at the courthouse in Florida. Let's see. Non-Clemson grad. If you have commentary, you should be with us as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can I be heard? Cool. I hope everyone is having a good day, relatively speaking. First, I will start with this. Right as I pulled up my computer on Facebook, I found an interesting article from Freedom Project Media that came out February 10th of this year called California Wants to Exempt LGBT Child Rapists from Sex Offenders Registry. I will move on from there. All right, so about, I think, a month ago, me, my wife, and a couple of friends went out to go bowling. And while bowling, we had our own lane, and there was a white couple from across from us, and the white couple, of course, was drinking. Eventually, can I be heard?
We can hear you.
Yeah, Peter's muted this stuff, I don't know. Okay, cool. The white couple, they were drinking, was a male and a female. And music was playing because it was a bowling alley. And I forget what song was playing, probably not particularly important, but it was a rap song maybe. And then the white dude said something smart or snarky about, I can't dance because I'm a white guy, to which I simply just ignored him as he looked at me and simply turned my head. He clearly understood that I didn't care much for his comments. So he tried to ask for my forgiveness and that, you know, if I didn't forgive him, it would eat him up for the rest of the night, to which I simply said, "Then I guess it's going to eat you up for the rest of the night." Next story. A while ago, me and my wife went out dancing, and the guy that was teaching a class was a what appeared to be a tragic mulatto, and he had a white wife. Now, that in itself wasn't particularly interesting to me, nor my wife. Interesting about that was the fact that if you would have saw the tragic mulatto male, he looked very good, and his wife, not so much. I don't know about you, but does anyone have a situation where they see a lot of, you know, good-looking non-white males going out with a bunch of not-so-great-looking white females? That seems to be a big thing here in the South where we live. And then another story. I said this the last time I called in. One of the things I'm responsible for at my job is something called a Title VI plan. It's the plan that deals with the rules and regulations for dealing with violations or reports of this, you know, discrimination when it comes to transportation, right? So I said a couple of months ago, a while back, that I changed some of the words to eliminate certain words like discrimination and complaint and replace them with words like mistreatment and report. So we were doing a training session for new members, for newly elected politicians in our region, because it's a new year, of course. And my coworker, white female, she was presenting on the website that she manages from her position. And one of the pages on there, of course, is the Title VI page, which I provide all the material that goes on that page. And when she was explaining the material on the page, I was really wondering what she was going to say. She ended up using different words than the ones I had put into the document myself. Instead of using the word discrimination, she used the word violation, and instead of using the word report, she used the word claim. And I couldn't help myself. You know what? Those are not bad words to use. I wonder why she chose not to use the words I put up there, or the usual words of discrimination and complaint. Nevertheless, I was a little intrigued. And then this is my main story. The person who is my friend and mentor, he's been working, well, he's a data analyst, and he was hired by someone who works at the county where I live, but the person who works for the county also is his own department, where he works as the director of workforce development for the county. So this means people who are looking for jobs, whether they're young, usually ages 17 to 24, maybe they got out of prison, or maybe they're having a hard time finding a job. Maybe they didn't finish school. It is this department's job to help these people find jobs, right? And, of course, this director hired my friend and mentor. And one of the things that my mentor knows a lot of things. He's really talented. And one of the things he's trying to do is that he's trying to get more money, so more money can be put into the transit or the buses in the region to help people get to and from work, because at the end of the day, it's very hard to make money when you can't even get to the job. So we're supposed to do something called a transit symposium back on April 11th, for which I was supposed to be one of the presenters. And unfortunately, the timing of it wasn't very well planned out. But besides that, one of the things that happened is that this newly hired white male, who is new to his position, who's only been there for about maybe 4 months, when he got into a room with my friend and mentor, and the person that hired him, the executive director, and a third black male from one of the businesses in the region. He was the only white male in the room, and he found out about this transit symposium event. He was completely spooked by the event, so much so that after the meeting, less than 20 minutes, he put together a whole email, not only emailing my immediate manager, but also emailing, I'm sorry about that, turn that off, emailing my immediate manager, but also emailing the director of the local transit agency, as I'm asking questions about the transit symposium. But the two particular questions that were very interesting was the fact that he asked,
Does anyone know anything about these particular men who are trying to do this event? Now, just reading those words alone without knowing the people involved wouldn't really mean much, but I know for a fact, obviously, he's referring to the black males that were in the room with him describing the event that they were trying to do to try to get more money for transit. And the fact that he used the word, does anyone know anything about the background, as if these two people were supposed to be like some kind of criminals or something like that, using that kind of language? And it makes sense when you understand the background of this white male. He is a former public relations officer for the sheriff's department in the county where we live. He did that job for about 15 years. And then he did 6 years at one of the local hospitals and maybe one of their PR departments as well, too. Yet this person is, for some reason, the director of something called a Mobility Alliance, which is supposed to be doing stuff with transportation, even though he himself has no skills or anything in transportation. Matter of fact, when he talks about his background in transportation, he merely has a story. He talked about the fact that he remembered having stories of having to go arrest kids for being truant to school, not showing up. And then when he would go get these kids or pick them up for whatever reason, he would say that he clearly saw that the issue with transportation was not that these kids were simply just avoiding school, but the fact that they had no access to transportation, whether their parents were able to take them to school or whether or not they were able to get on a bus to get to school. And that was the pinnacle of his transportation experience. Keep in mind, he's supposed to bring together people who actually have experience, people like myself who actually went to school for this stuff, and he has no experience in this realm. So after he had a little conniption about the fact that this event was supposed to happen back earlier in April, about a week ago now, he asked that the event be postponed until he can get some advice from the local transit agency. The local transit agency was fully aware of the event, but for some reason they chose not to make him aware that that they knew about the event, but they decided to coalesce to him anyways, even though he had no real leg to stand on to postpone this event. So because the executive director of the workforce development was too scared about, like, you know, upsetting white people over this event, and that this white man was, you know, having a, you know, conniption about, you know, not being ready for the event because he's only 4 months in the position and knows nothing about transit, he decided to postpone. Now, me, I was upset, and so was my friend and mentor, because obviously he spent a lot of time and energy getting ready for this event, right? So now it's going to be postponed. Now, first and foremost, the event was postponed until, I think, the last week of April, so more than 2 months away. But interestingly enough, this is where the real shiestiness comes in. About, I think, earlier this week, the man who went through all that just to get the event postponed, all of a sudden planned and scheduled his own event that's supposed to happen at the end of March. Just showing the nefariousness, what you would call unjust networking of everything he was trying to do. So obviously communicating with my immediate manager, communicating with the director of the transit agency, and whoever else that I'm just simply not aware of, to get my friend in the upper and the direct in the workforce development director to postpone so that he can get ready, just to undermine the event so he could throw his own event. And the thing about his event is that it's nothing compared to what my friend is doing. He's just simply bringing together a whole bunch of people from the region, just to talk and maybe have coffee together or something like that, for which I personally wanted to be in town for anyway, so it doesn't even matter to me. My friend is talking about how because of a change in federal law allows banks to directly fund transit services in a region to improve transit services. And that event is still going to happen. And even and after it happens, I would like to believe that people like this white male who clearly has no experience in transit will clearly be revealed to be the inadequate dopes that they are at their jobs. But then again, my friend has also shown me that in this region, being adequate at your job is not a prerequisite for dismissal. If anything, you'll probably get a promotion. And with that, I will end my story.
Text of white supremacy for individuals classified as white. Composite competence is not a prerequisite for a promotion. Four more years. Wow. Quite a bit to share. In conjunction with four more years, in general, I don't see a lot of investment in infrastructure, especially in areas where there are a substantial number of black people. And it looks like this infrastructure might benefit black people. I don't think white people are too excited about those type of projects. And in fact, I would say they would generally staunchly oppose them anywhere you happen to be. But wow, let's see. It was so many things I had to take notes. My man, Clemson co-founder, Pitchfork Ben Tillman, is rolling over in his grave. Let's see. You and your wife at the bowling alley, I was reminded of Big Lebowski, where the white man was hurt. I'm a white guy, I can't dance. And then for whatever reason, oh, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. Come on now. Doesn't get any better than tacky. And that's environments with white people and alcohol. You already know. And so I think that's most bowling alleys. It's very rare to find a sober bowling alley where everyone is just drinking like spring water and, you know, maybe flavored. They're doing like dry bowling. That is very, very odd. Unless like it's a 10-year-old birthday party. And most of the time they don't have birthday parties at bowling alleys. Let's see. The white man who comes to the traffic meeting, I think traffic in general, public transportation, because there's so many examples of white people deliberately undermining public transportation, deliberately limiting public transportation. There's a great report on the MARTA system in Atlanta. I forgot what it all stands for. Metropolitan Atlanta's Rapid Transportation Association. Maybe I didn't forget. I think that's it. But the MARTA system, it's like they're...
I believe MARTA stands for Moving Africans Around Transit Rapidly, something along those lines.
Well, that is not the official acronym, but that is also, that is not officially, but that is commonly also known, Moving Africans Rapidly Through Atlanta. I think that's in James Baldwin's books, his book, Evidence of Things Not Seen. But either way, the public transit system there, buses and their little ragtop, I was going to say subway, but it's not even really a subway, because it is deliberately sabotaged. Like, this is known. They was going to say there was a great report written about this during, they had a big snowstorm a few years back in Atlanta. They'd be like, oh, it would be awesome if MARTA was accessible and you could easily get to any spot of Atlanta, since it's such a big city and it's, you know, 2 million people in the greater, you know, Atlanta area and the outsides and such. It's so many people here. Be great if we had wonderful public transportation, but no way, because we do not want all of those black people moving around easily, willy-nilly, on the buses and so on. Matter of fact, it's so retarded. I have never been retarded, deliberately delayed. It's so retarded, deliberately so, the subway doesn't even link up with the bus correctly. I lived in Atlanta, so like the subway stops running at a different time than the bus. So like, I've never seen anything as goofy as, for a major city, no less. Like, I could understand if we were in some, you know, country bumpkin town, but this is not just Atlanta. This is the capital of the state of Georgia. And you have this sort of ragtag white supremacy racism. So this white man comes with that same spirit. What? Who let these coons organize a meeting about who are these coons exactly? What's their background? Like, why? I'm reading a book. We should have the author on the program Monday about the history of McDonald's specifically and how they marketed to acquire black franchise owners in the really late 60s and mostly 70s and on. And just how racism was such a big component of that. And it is striking the similarities that it would be sometimes black people coming forward and saying, hey, this is, you know, they're exploiting. They're just coming in and getting cheap property in black areas so they can come hawk their cheap, unhealthy food and litter all over the place and everything else. And then we don't benefit. And then they take all this money out and they don't do anything to benefit, you know, the black people that live there. And it's like, it, like say it's non-Clemson grad who speaks something like, hey. Who is this fella? Where did you get him from? What's his background? Has he been a crimp? Like, yeah, it would be this sort of same type of thing. And it frequently would work. Like, yeah, who is this fella? What's your background? What are your fingerprints? Where did you go to school? Like, consistent. And that's probably some unjust networking. And then it's just compounded. He uses all of that deliberate white supremacy racism. I guess you can think for yourself if that sounds like a white man who is ignorant about racism. He does all that to then sabotage and undermine. Oh, I got my own event that I'm coming up with. I'm just using that as a ploy to get this postponed because you got these unsavory niggers who, you know, with their background that's questionable. You let them come out and organize this meeting to try and steal transportation dollars from us. Let's slow down. And then I can get my own meeting together. Hopefully we can cut them out of this affair completely and maybe squash the whole thing because we don't want Negroes moving around Georgia or anyplace else too easily on public transportation. So, I do not think, or I would expect more of this sort of opposition for expanding transportation to help black people. That is generally not frowned upon. And I say that from the city of Seattle, where they have spectacular public transportation. They have a ferry system, they have a bus system, they have a train system, they have a monorail system, they have a light rail system, and it's all linked together. You would not catch the subway where it ends at 10 p.m. and the bus runs later, or vice versa, where they have something crazy like that where you'd be stranded in one spot. Spectacular bus system that actually does run 24 hours. Atlanta doesn't even have that 24-hour public transportation in a city where, again, you have over 2 million, unless I'm misinformed, who live in Atlanta and then the outskirts right around. It's 2 million people, and they don't even have 24-hour public transportation by design. Much obliged, non-Clemson grad. 24-hour public transportation. Make sure I get the public in. Don't even have 24-hour public transportation, which is pretty common in most big cities. New York, San Francisco, Seattle. Pretty common for them to have 24-hour transportation. Anywho, other folks, any comments they need to get in? Last few moments. Well, oh, already read her email. She is with us live now. B in Toronto. Did you have commentary to share?
Yes, I. Can you hear me okay, guys?
Your volume is a little low. If you could get closer to the speaker and or speak up, that would be helpful.
Sure. Is this better?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, perfect. Greetings to you, callers and listeners. I'm so sorry. I'm just catching on the tail end of the broadcast, being that I just finished literally from work right now. So unfortunately, I don't know what occurred prior, and based on what you've mentioned, Gus, thank you so much for reading the letter or the email that I'd sent. So just to give you a quick update on, or to report on what happened. So I handed in my termination letter. Well, I just to bring it back further. I last Wednesday I spoke to HR about what was happening at the plantation that I was working at, and then the HR woman, who's also non-white black woman, she presented as very supportive, and she told me if I needed to leave before my contract is up, because my contract would have finished end of March, then I do what I need to do. So I said, okay, no problem. Luckily, by Friday of that same week, I was able to get a letter, an offer of employment, and I handed in my termination. And I had asked the HR department to please keep quiet about my departing, because I really just didn't want any additional issues. Of course, the white women that were there, you know, continued what they usually do, which was terrorize. And then fast forward, I got my final pay and everything else today. And I noticed that it was far more than I had usually received. I was expecting slightly more, like, you know, maybe an additional vacation or what have you, but it was like literally an amount over, like a certain amount over. And so I sent an email to the same HR individual and informed her. I said, well, I noticed that I had this amount. Can you just double check with finance just to make sure that, you know, it's not incorrect, because I had a sunken feeling that, you know, this is probably the last deliberate hurrah moment is to make it incorrect, because according to the contract at the time, if it is correct, incorrect, and if it was overpayment, then you're responsible for paying back the company. Come to find out that it was correct, and I'm like, okay, well, where is this excess amount coming from? Was I not being paid in accordance to the contract? What was happening? And I come to find out that every year the employees get $1,000 bonus. $1,000 bonus. Right now in Toronto, well, in Ontario, you have the provincial government that is cutting different organizations for the funding. And oftentimes I hear organizations talk about, you know, we just don't have enough money for this or that. And the fact that this organization manages to give $1,000 bonus. So literally, if you work there 20 years, you get $20,000 bonus. It's not sales, it's just the bonus. And that floored me. Because I'm thinking the majority, like inside, majority white, it just made sense. They're going to browbeat and bully and drive out non-white people because they want all this resource, because it's designed under their society for all this resource. But it just blew my mind. $1,000 bonus. Even when I worked in the bank, employees at that time were not getting $1,000 bonus. The most that I had gotten on my sales, and they were like minor sales in the bank, was like $250. And the white women who were terrorizing me there even tried to screw that up. So, I mean, it was just interesting. And then after, there's that whole piece on ostracism and how it's a cornerstone of racism and how it's the grease. And it's still a theory that I'm working on and hoping to find more information about. But I digress on that one. But, yes, I just wanted to share that, and I leave the line. Thank you.
If anyone is ignorant about racism, it's black people.
Black people.
Context of white supremacy. Say all the time in the workplace, I'm not here to talk about when we leave to go have drinks at the lingerie lounge. I'm not here to talk about is Thursday going to be ice cream day? Thursday is taco day. Next Wednesday is ice cream day? Oh, I'm not here to talk about any of that. There are things that are integral to me being an employee at this company that I don't know about. Let's talk about that. We can get to all the other stuff. The ice cream Tuesday, maybe we get to that later. Pizza Thursday, we get to that later. $1,000 annually just for hanging out here? Wow. That is something that, you know, it would be nice to know that. Little kernels of information like that, left and right, that we just don't know in workplace settings. And exactly right, where white people set up these type of workplace environments where they are temporary, permanent. I got a nice cushy spot. It might even be, once you get that, it might jump. You know, you stay with the company ever so long and it goes up to 1500. Who knows, you know, how long you stay here. I mean, they got all kinds of little tidbits. But yeah, where we get our little perks and bonuses and benefits. And sometimes we don't even work. We just sit around and find other Negroes to intern and we make them do all the work. Just make sure my benefits, I'm going to, you know, get me a Negro accountant to check to make sure that that's correct. System of racism manifests in so many ways. I do think that that is sparkling codification to say, wait a minute, this could be a final insult for them to come in and make some sort of error where it has me thinking, oh, hey, you know, I got, you know, a nice little severance package or whatever. And then, oh, wait a minute, we overpaid you. You owe us $2,000. We expect payment immediately, like, for it to be that sort of thing, to go ahead and check and just confirm that this is correct amount. Sparkling codification, in my view. We've talked about that before, reviewing pay records, because a lot of times there'll be errors. Sometimes just with computers there can be errors, period. But particularly where you're in a situation where you've been assaulted, terrorized for this long, I would definitely check to verify all of the commas, decimal points are in the correct place, every shilling is accounted for. But bravo on the bonus. That's spectacular. System of racism is still underpaid, but whatever. And congratulations on getting a new place of employment. I also thought that was a great tactic in telling human resources to kind of be discreet in disclosing your departure. That might even be a more standard piece of codification to adopt, so that when we leave, it's not a part, not that it's a party and celebration, but just if it can be less, where, you know, tons of people don't know and a big to do, grand. You can do a few handshakes on the way out, and obviously immediate supervisor will know, but you just won't minimize the tackiness. No, I don't want a party. You can keep Taco Tuesday on Tuesday. We don't need to move it around on my account. Everything is fine. And go ahead and get out of here. Thank you kindly. It's been nice. Taco Tuesday. But congrats on the new employment. I hope it's way better. No ostracism. And congrats on the bonus. That's spectacular. Yeah. Invest.
Yes, save and it. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Sorry to interrupt, Gus. I had another thing too, because what I did was with the new job that I'm in. It's a higher position, and I have several persons that are that I'll be supervising, and it's unfortunately the pay is less, but I factored the cost benefit into the equation. I figured, you know what, I might as well just go and take this if it's a higher title, so that it goes on to the resume. So I'd also encourage that in some cases where the title is higher but you're getting slightly less, to have a plan as to how you would work that in, and then add that onto your resume to make more of an impact, so that you can then use that to negotiate for a higher position and higher salary.
Excellent recommendations, and factoring in if it's going to be a slight increase, hopefully nothing substantial, but if it's a slight decrease, in salary, factoring in the cost of, hopefully this is a healthier environment where you don't have all of the ostracism and warlike tactics that were being employed against you. I think that takes a cost as well. So being removed from that environment, hopefully that will help compensate for the slight decrease in salary. But that we talk about that regularly. That is something to factor in. If you are in an environment that is that toxic and you don't see yourself advancing there, being there in a healthy manner in 2 years, 3 years, man, you can find a better plantation that's a little bit healthier, make your coins, can be much better, and see how that impacts your health. Like, pay attention over the next month or so. If things are better there, still system of white supremacy, but if things are a little bit better, see how that impacts your overall health, well-being, and energy, being in a different environment away from all that toxicity that you've been talking to us about for so long. With that, we did our 3 hours. Much obliged for folks tuning in. I don't think we missed any hands. I don't think. Yeah, all the folks that. I don't think we missed any hands. Yeah. Anywho, we'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We should also be here on Monday, the 24th. That's the book franchise. I mentioned it already. It is pretty much workplace racism. Talking about McDonald's efforts, the treachery. A lot of the book is like late 60s, like after Dr. King's assassination, and then 70s forward. But talking about how McDonald's, they were looking to get their franchise into areas with a lot of black people where you could get cheap property sometimes, because after the so-called riots, after Dr. King's assassination, you had burned out lots or cheap property. White people didn't want to have businesses there anymore. So you could get a really cheap piece of property and put your franchise there for nothing. And then boom, you got this fast food giant, and then lots of black people are shopping there. They don't have a lot of money. So you can go get a cheap, you know, hamburger, fries, whatever it is. And this is in rhyme. You can go get out of the cold, lots of other things. Now it's Wi-Fi and all the rest of it. So can become a whole little hub, especially if you're in an area where they don't have community centers, libraries, that sort of thing. McDonald's is the whole hub, and you can get chicken nuggets. But yeah, they would try to get racial showcasing. They would try to get black people to look like the front person, even if it was white people behind the scenes, as they say, who were putting up a lot of capital or loans for the operating costs and making money from all of this. But it would look like a black person owns this franchise. They had lots of examples of that in the book. And even the black people who would get a franchise, they're thinking they're getting involved in this to help black people and get jobs and make money. And that's one way to fight against racism. They ended up having to mobilize and like, wait a minute, these McDonald's folks are practicing racism against us. They're sticking us in these areas where it's really high cost and we got high security costs and high overhead. It's really hard for us to make money. And they're doing this specifically to the black people who own McDonald's franchises. Like, we could have done it in workplace racism, but Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, I think is, yeah, that's when it's supposed to be. The book is franchise. It just came out right at the end of 2018. Black author, no less. Black female. Anywho, much obliged for folks who tuned in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Do not go to the lingerie lounge, especially not in a city municipal vehicle. In addition to being sober, every time you are in a vehicle, driver or passenger, be buckled up. If you are driving, you are sober, buckled, and you are not on your cell phone. Again, just doing little things to stay out of greater confinement. Minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed. I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.